call you any night, any day. In your heart, you'll hear it call you. Come away, come away. Valley High will whisper on the wind of the sea. Here am I, your special island. Come to me.
I'd like to call to order the afternoon session of the Goleta City Council. If you will join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, if you would call the roll.
Councilmember Aceves?
Here.
Councilmember Bennett?
Here.
Councilmember Perotti?
Here.
Mayor Pretend Vallejo?
Here.
Mayor Farr?
Here. And now is the opportunity for members of the public to address the council on matters that are not on the agenda today. I have no speaker slips, so I assume nobody will be speaking.
No speaker slips, Mayor.
Very good. Thank you. Now, are there any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
Mr. Mayor, there are no amendments or adjustments.
All right. Thank you. All right. We shall now proceed. We're going to have a presentation by Vito Adamidis and Jaime Lopez.
We have one prior to that.
Getting ahead of the game here. We have someone to honor here. Ms. Liliana, will you come up here, and we have a five-year pin for you. Liliana Campos has been a workhorse around here and a veteran and always in high spirits. I don't think I've ever seen you unhappy, so it's a real pleasure to work with you. And now we've got Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo is going to pin with great caution this pin on you. Very good. Did you want to say a word?
So thank you to everyone. I appreciate the pin. I wouldn't be here without the knowledge and staff's ability to help me out all the time with any question I have. I look forward to what the future brings for Goleta, and 2016 will mark my 18th year of dedication to public service, so a little proud of that. Come from a family that has worked in public service for many years. I have many uncles and aunts that work for county and city agencies, so I always looked up to them, and I'm happy to follow in their footsteps.
Well, we're happy.
Mr. Mayor, Deborah Lopez and I would like to add a couple of comments. We both work closely with Liliana on a day-to-day basis, and we're so happy that she came to Goleta in the first place and that she's remained here so long with her skill set and her talents. We know she's highly sought after, so we're so happy to have her here. Thank you for great years so far. Let's keep it going. And I'll pass it to Deborah.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to tell you a little bit about Liliana, the city's deputy city clerk. She was hired in April of 2011. Throughout the five-year period, Liliana has significantly contributed to our division's success. Most recently, the city rolled out another platform to streamline the agenda packet process. Liliana was a vital part of that implementation process. She answered every call for help, and as you know, whenever we introduce something new, it doesn't always go smoothly. But Liliana's cheery disposition and always available attitude, you know, helped us get through that process. A few things you don't know about Liliana is that not only does she work hard to meet the division's deadlines, but also during the holiday season, she and other staff, they work hard to organize donations and gifts to give to the needy families and our seniors in our community. So I thought that should go with note. Liliana has this wonderful quote that she shared with me some time ago, and I hope she doesn't mind. But she has this motto, make every day your masterpiece, and that's how I see Liliana. So I want to thank you for your 5 years of service, and look forward to many more years.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the council members? Ms. Paul.
Liliana, I think you started about the same time, a little bit after I did. And I know I just want to say it's been a pleasure having you here and your help, and you're always available, and you're professional, and you're very kind, answering all my questions and helping me. And it's been a pleasure working with you. Thank you. I hope we can keep you another five and even longer. Thank you.
Well, let me add to that, if I can add to that. I feel the same way that everybody else does. You know, you're a wonderful person to work with, and we're very happy that you're following in the footsteps of your family. So, again, thank you very much. And like Ms. Perotti says, let's hope we can give you, in absentia, in my case, a 25-year pin. So, thank you, Liliana.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a terrific staff here at the city, so I guess you all know we feel that way about that. In fact, just to prove my point, I'm going to pass this over to several staff members, Vito Adamitis, who's the Director of Neighborhood services and very ably abetted by Jaime Lopez, who's the Director of Economic Development. If you would, Mr. Adomaitis. Oh, okay, yeah. I guess we'll get the clerk rolling on this.
Item A2, 2015 Public Safety Annual Report.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. Staff is pleased to be here today to bring you the 2015 Public Safety Annual Report. As the Council is aware, we bring an annual report to the Council to share all of the activities and highlights of the past year in working with both the Sheriff's Office and the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. We're very pleased today to be joined by a number of representatives from both departments that I'd like to, by way of introduction, introduce them to you. So starting at the table here, we have Lieutenant Butch Arnaldi, our former Chief of Police Services, but he's not that far away, so we can still track him down and bug him about all kinds of things. Captain Dave Zanaboni, the Public Information Officer for the County Fire Department, and Division Chief Martin Johnson with the Santa Barbara County Fire Department. We also have and are really thankful for the presence of Undersheriff Barney Malekian here and appreciate his support and partnership with the city. Commander Kelly Moore, the South Coast County Operations Commander. Hiding behind him is Lieutenant Kevin Huddle, our new Chief of Police Services. And also Sergeant William Hennebry, who is the Traffic Unit Supervisor, along with Community Resource Deputy Dave Valadez. And also Motor Officers, Senior Deputy Jeff Farmer and Mr. Tom Green. John DeLeon is part of that group and is not here this week, but we wanted to make mention. As we get into the report, as the Council is aware, the Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office provides contract service to the City of Goleta, has done so since incorporation. It is the largest contract city for the County of Santa Barbara Sheriff's Office. We also have the largest motor traffic safety unit with 4 officers. We have a current staffing level of 33 full-time personnel, and this includes 31 peace officers and 2 non-sworn personnel. The city also receives services from the County of Santa Barbara Fire Protection District through the County Fire Department. There are 16 fire stations across the county. 9 are in North County and 7 are in South County. 3 of these stations are in the city of Goleta, stations 11, 12, and 14. If we can go to the next slide. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Lieutenant Butch Arnaldi to go over the stats and figures for you that are shown on the PowerPoint. Lieutenant?
Thank you, Vito. Okay, our traffic citation statistics, last year we were down a little bit. We had 1,287 for the year. Towed vehicles, 2015 we had 97, which is a little bump up from 93 from the year before. But you have to look at 2007 when we had 181. You have to also remember that some new ordinances came into being and things of that nature, which when you have less vehicles towed, that means that your education component must be working, so as well as citations, because that's a key to any type of enforcement is education. So don't look at that as the guys or gals not doing their job, because there's an educational component. Collision statistics, it's pretty much to note that 2007 and 2015 were almost a carbon copy. 2015, we had 253 non-injury collisions, 119 injury collisions, number of injuries was 161, and unfortunately, we had 3 fatalities. You know, it's pretty darn close to what happened in 2007. But by the same token, your population has grown tremendously, and the use of the streets in the city of Goleta. So to keep that at that rate, I think, is a testament to what the men and women are doing patrolling your streets day in and day out. Next statistic is our calls for service. Last year, we set not only the all-time record for the number of reports, but also non-reported calls for service. We almost had 25,000. This was a 15% increase over the previous year. And again, when you bring that many more people in and that many more calls for service to keep the crime rate as we did and the other statistics more or less to flatten out, that, again, that shows you the excellent work the guys and gals are doing out there day in and day out, 24 hours a day. Your part one crime statistics. Our part one crimes for the city of Goleta went up 15%, which on its face value, you'll say, God, that's quite a bit. Again, this was for the calls for service, excuse me. Part one crimes went up 8%. Whereas Santa Barbara County, it went up 2. City of Santa Barbara went up 6. Carpinteria stayed the same. City of Builton went down 24%, and City of Solvang went up 1. But the interesting deal to note is the per capita statistical data that Jaime put in there. It really shows a reflection that although that 8% sounds like a lot, it really isn't. Yeah, of note, especially last year on our robberies, we went from 1 to 12, which, you know, that's a heck of a jump. But by the same token, you also have to look at least I do, the more people have confidence in the organization and police service, especially as of late, all the negative press that law enforcement has received throughout the United States, to have that confidence in contacting us and wanting to report crimes, again, to me, is very essential and shows that we have a good working relationship with our public. A motor vehicle theft was another one that rose tremendously. 2014, we had 18, and it went up to 34 last year. So you take the robberies and the motor vehicle theft, you take those couple out of there, and, you know, the crime stats for part one crimes was pretty level for the last few years. Any questions on that statistical data?
I was just going to add, Commander Moore and I were speaking previously, and we looked up two legislative insertions that have occurred over the last couple of years. Yeah, Proposition 47, which was a ballot initiative that reduced certain drug possession felonies to misdemeanors, as well as you have AB 109 and its tandem bill 117 that govern the realignment process for state prison and sending some of the low-level offenders back to the counties. And while the data still hasn't fully been analyzed yet because it's relatively recent, we did want to point that out because there is some thought that there is an impact going on with that. As you reduce certain crimes and people get out earlier, there may be a chance for recidivism or even just more crime occurring, but we didn't want to make any factual statements other than saying that these bills have been in place, and more than likely in the next couple of years we'll see some sort of analytical report on the impacts of those bills going forward.
Okay, most of this I already covered. Again, our 8% part one crime increase. Again, we had 498 compared in 2015 compared to 460 part one crimes in 2014. Robbery, we already discussed. Burglary decreased for the second year in a row from 121 in 2014 to 110 in 2015. Larceny theft increased from 283 up to 307. And as already mentioned, our motor vehicle thefts went from 18 to 34. In our calls for service, that 15% increase, as well as our reports written, increased from 3119 in 2014 to 3237 last year. I think Vito's going to cover our recognition as a safe city.
As part of the efforts put forth by the very dedicated men and women of the Sheriff's Office, we are pleased to report some of the recognitions that the city has received. So in July of last year, Goleta was ranked number 71 out of the top 100 cities in California. And also, Goleta was recognized as one of the safest places to live in California, according to a study conducted by Safewise, Goleta placed in the top 50 safest cities in California, coming in at number 50. Both of these recognitions are based on the most recent FBI crime data and reporting. At that time, it was in 2013, so there's it lags behind the current year. But it is important to just share that the efforts that are out in the field every day are helping make Goleta a very safe community for our business and residents all over the city. One of the full-time equivalents and staff positions that the city funds is the school resource deputy. And this is school resource deputy and senior deputy George Hedricks. He has provided us his statistics for the last year. As you can see up on the screen, 10 felony arrests. He is assigned to Dos Pueblos High School, but he has also made contact with some of the other schools, including Goleta Valley Junior High on occasion. He had 48 misdemeanor arrests. He's conducted 185 field interviews, issued 49 criminal citations, prepared 70 offense reports, also done some class hours, and has conducted 240 parent-student conferences, which these numbers really speak to his presence on the campus and working with the school and the parents. I also just wanted to share another piece of information with the council that you might be interested in. Senior Deputy Hedricks has been the varsity baseball coach at Dos Pueblos High School for the last 4 years. The previous three, he was the pitching coach, and this year, he is the head coach of the varsity baseball team. Hmm. In comparing some of these stats, because I knew the council would want to know, in the prior 2 years, in 2014 and 2015, the varsity baseball team's record was 9-7. And this was for both 2014 and 2015. This year, I'm pleased to report to the council that the record has improved to 12-4 for the first 16 games. They're about halfway through the season. In 2014 and 2015, the longest winning streak for the team was 4 games. This year, it's been 10 games. So, George, if you're watching somewhere, we just want you to know that these efforts are much appreciated, and we'll look forward to reporting back to the council at a future date. But we have received a lot of very positive feedback from a lot of folks who appreciate the presence of Deputy Hedricks at Dos Pueblos High School.
Vito, if you'll excuse us, I think Ms. Perotti wants to over here.
Just have a real quick question. I know you said that he's at Dos Pueblos and he's doing a great job. How often is he at the junior high?
One day a week. Normally on Wednesdays they go to Goleta Valley Junior High.
Okay, and you think that's working out okay? Do you think they need more than one day a week? Just curious.
It's working out well because we also have other school resource deputy from San Marcos High School, Senior Deputy Manley, who also goes there one day a week. So,
Is it your guess that we would need to worry about San Marcos or Santa Barbara High filching him as a coach of the baseball team there?
We hope not. In fact, they beat Santa Barbara, I think it was yesterday or the day before.
Our next person that we'd like to share with the council is our community resource deputy, Dave Valadez, who has really done an outstanding job. And some of the summary of his work is up on the screen for you, including working in the community on graffiti abatement and gang prevention, coordinating all the business watch and neighborhood watch activity, doing prevention through environmental design presentations to local businesses and community centers. I believe last week he conducted a presentation on business safety for the Chamber's issues and policy roundtable. He has also participated in the Safe Routes to School program and initiated the Coffee with a Cop and Walk with a Cop events. He has also very courageously participated in the pedestrian safety stings that are conducted throughout the city.
has provided emergency response training to schools, and also runs outreach programs like the Citizens Academy and the Sheriff's Volunteer Team. He has office hours at both the Old Town Substation and also the Communal Rail Marketplace Next slide. So for the Motor Traffic Safety Unit, we have a summary of some of the activities conducted for 2015. As the council is aware, there is a lot of activity in the Motor Traffic Safety Unit consistent with the council's priority on traffic safety. Last year, 15 DUI checkpoints were conducted, resulting in over 12,000 vehicles screened, almost 13,000. 58 field sobriety tests were conducted. 13 DUI arrests were made. There were also seven physical other arrests, three felony and four misdemeanors, and a series of citations for driving on a suspended or revoked license and also driving without a license, and a number of tows that are conducted as part of the enforcement effort. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Division Chief Martin Johnson and Captain David Zanamoni with the County Fire Department.
Thank you, Vito. It's good to be here today. I wanted to briefly introduce, I brought along with me Local Engine Company 14 from Los Caneros Road, Captain Sanchez, Engineer Waddell, and Firefighter James Malore. So they're part of your team is here in the house today, so we're excited about that. Before I go through our brief PowerPoint presentation, I want to just take the opportunity to publicly thank the Sheriff's Department. You know, we work so closely hand-in-hand with them, and I've spent many years of my career on the UCSB campus and the Isla Vista communities, and day in and day out, we work with them in all hours of the night out there, and developed a lot of friendships, and it can just tell you something you already intuitively know, but the hard work that they do out there is just priceless, not only to the community, but to us as firefighters, because they have our backs out there, and I just wanted to publicly say how much we appreciate that to them today. With that, I'm going to go through a PowerPoint presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions at the end. Just a little bit of background on me. I'm the division chief in charge of the Administration Support Services Division, so I oversee dispatch, logistics, our EMS, and training bureaus. What does the Santa Barbara County Fire Department do for the city of Goleta? I thought I would just briefly talk about that. We're an all-risk service agency, and what that means is we don't just fight fires anymore. Back in the day, our primary mission, and certainly still is today in that sense, we respond to structure fires and vegetation fires and vehicle accidents, but we also do all kinds of other things in your community. Essentially, any time a call comes into the 911 center, if it's not law enforcement related, a lot of times it gets punted to us, whether it's somebody who just needs help getting up off the floor, or it can be other things such as water rescues, hazardous materials incidents, any myriad of things that can come up. And yes, we still do get cats out of trees, in case any of you are wondering. So, next slide. One of the things we like to emphasize is it's not just about responding to emergencies, although that's what we're here for. When the bell goes off, we will run out of the room. But we're very active in your community. We enjoy doing things like the California Lemon Festival, the Fireworks Festival. One of the things I love that we do is the Fire Safety Trailer. For those of you who may not know what this is, the Fire Safety Trailer was about 10 years ago, we got on a grant. And that trailer every year goes to every third grade class in the county of Santa Barbara. And what it is basically a miniature mock-up of a home. Have you ever seen this show, Tiny House Living, or on HGTV? My wife loves this show. I don't totally understand it. But if you envision that, that's basically what this is. It's a trailer with three small rooms. One's a bedroom, one's a kitchen, one's a family room. And we have a bunch of fire hazards that we create in those rooms, and we take those third graders through, and we visually show them fire hazards that they can identify in their homes. And one of the final things that they go through, you can see that middle picture, there's a mock-up of a bedroom there. We have them in there, the alarm goes off, the smoke machine starts to create smoke, and we show them how to roll out of bed and crawl low in smoke, and they go over and they feel the door, and there's heating coils in the door, and the door's hot to the touch, so they, oh, you can't open the door because there's fire on the other side of that door. What are you going to do now? And they have to turn around and go out their window and go down the ladder. There is just something very special, in my opinion, about a young child, the way they learn through all of their senses. They see, they feel, they touch, they smell, and they get to experience what it is to be fire safe. And I've had now, we've been doing this long enough, grown people in, from UCSB and college tell me how they remember going through the third grade fire safety trailer. So it's something that's, that we love to do and we think is very valuable. Next slide, please. Other things involved is we have a complete fire protection bureau. Many of their responsibilities are in new development. Years ago, I was the captain in planning and engineering, and I look around the room, Deborah, Vito, Michelle, we were all kind of growing up together doing this thing, and it was an exciting time. But when a new project comes in, we place fire code conditions on those new developments to ensure that they have all the fire safety systems that they're required to have. The fire hydrants are where we're going to need them to be when the development is complete, road widths, and then ongoing, we also do business inspections throughout the community annually to make sure the sprinkler systems, alarm systems, and everything are functioning properly and serviced accordingly. So that gives you some statistics on what we've done in regards to plan checks and development review. And it seems to waffle back and forth there a little bit, but it generally follows what the economy is doing at the time. Next slide. Just some general overall statistics for you. Your three stations in your city, Station 11, you have an engine company as well as a truck company assigned there. And we broke down some of the statistics for you to show you the myriad of calls that we do go on. But the interesting number, I think, is the total on the right-hand side. And you can kind of see how it was somewhat of an anomaly in 14-15 where we had the exact number of calls those 2 years in a row, which, frankly, I've never seen that before, but we'd luck of the draw, I guess. But they kind of have tend to crept up each and every year over the years. Next slide. Just an interesting thing to point out here, too, at Station 11. In your city, we have a search dog program. We also have an arson dog program. These are nationally certified dogs. That one is sniffs out accelerants for arson. The other sniffs out human scent for earthquakes. Things that are going on around the country. In fact, I believe Eric was sent to Nepal. So one of our own local firefighters with his dog, who is trained in finding human scent in rubble, is on the other side of the world right now, representing you and I in saving people.
Recently, he went out again.
Oh, that's what I meant.
Oh, he went to the last earthquake back in Nepal, but did he go recently? I didn't know that.
I had heard that. Anyway.
I wouldn't doubt it.
We'll get back with you on that, but wanted to mention that program. It's a wonderful program, and these dogs almost have a therapeutic effect, you know, even in the firehouse. It's wonderful to have a firehouse dog back in the station. You can see Truck 11 statistics there. Again, the numbers kind of creep up every year. Station 12 is one of our busiest stations in the county. It's right in the heart of Goleta, right there at Cayo Real, just west of Patterson. And they go to a lot of medical emergencies, as you can see there in that left column, over almost 1,600 this last year. And because of their centralized location, they go on a lot of things in helping other stations as well on vehicle accidents and other multi-engine responses. Next slide. And Station 14 on Los Caneros Road next to the Stowe House. I always thought this was one of the nicest locations. If I wanted to be at a fire station, this is where I'd like to be stationed, right there at the park. But you can see from their statistics again, 666 back in 2011 up to a little over 800 this last year. And then the last slide for you today, I just wanted to say a public thank you regarding Station 10. You know, on a personal note, I remember being hired in 1987 and the fire chief at the time saying very excitedly how he was, you know, thrilled to talk about the future of the organization and how Fire Station 10 was, you know, going to be built. And we as young rookie firefighters, wow, we're excited about that. And 30 years later, here we are, we're finally making it happen. So I'm excited to be a part of that, and it's an honor to be involved with Vito and others at the city to make that come to fruition. So thank you so much.
Mr. Mayor,
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, as we conclude our report and presentation to you today, staff wanted to also thank the city's public safety subcommittee comprised of council members Roger Aceves and Michael Bennett for their feedback. We provided a preview of this report, really a draft of this report, to the city's public safety committee on April 6th. And as you can see today, we've incorporated some of their edits and feedback. So we want to thank them for their feedback. And staff just wanted to conclude by just expressing our appreciation for the tremendous partnership that the city enjoys with both the fire department and the sheriff's office, and all of the very dedicated men and women of both departments who really help make Goleta a great place. Even though the fire chief wasn't here, we wanted to also thank Fire Chief Peterson for his leadership and support in helping to move the Fire Station 10 project forward. I wanted to share with the council that just last week we had our first project kickoff meeting with the fire department and the project team to begin the process of moving this important project forward. So with that, this concludes our staff report today. Staff is happy to answer any questions you might have at this time. Thank you.
Council Member Aceves.
Chief Johnson, after a committee meeting, I walked away with a question I wish I'd asked. And each station house has a bunch of statistics. But what happens if 14's covering 12 and handles something in 12's jurisdiction? Does 12 get the credit, or does the 14 get the credit?
That's a good question. It is by district. So 12's, even though 14 is handling a call for 12, it happens in 12's district, 12 gets the credit. Yeah.
Well, I hope there's sufficient paybacks then, at least they balance off the numbers at the end of the day.
Yeah.
All right.
Lots of ice cream.
Lots of ice cream.
Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
I noticed that it seems like every house is reporting more medical calls. Is that just population, or do you know why that is? Or?
Great question. There's a couple theories on that. Okay. One is always the growing population answer, or aging population is also very common. One of the things we've seen, however, in some studies is the impact of the Affordable Care Act on the community. This is commonly known as Obamacare. Mm-hmm. We're seeing more and more people getting away from your private insurance, Blue Anthem, Blue Cross, into the Affordable Care Act. One of the challenges is that they've been having trouble finding doctors who will actually take that. And so we're seeing that impact now flow onto the emergency system.
Interesting.
It's interesting, even the emergency rooms, there are penalties in place where if someone gets readmitted to the hospital within 30 days of being released for the same condition, there's financial penalties to those hospitals. And so we're seeing a lot of, I think, unintended impacts on the emergency side of the house, given the things that are starting to come to fruition with that act.
And they thought that was actually going to go down, right? I mean, they expected people to get to the doctor and not go into the emergency room for visits. Not to make it a political statement, I'm just saying that's what I heard when we... Anyway, okay, I was just curious, because I think there was one house that didn't report more, but the rest did, and so
yeah,
seemed pretty universal.
Okay, Councilmember Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, first of all, I want to thank the Sheriff's Department and the Fire Department for the great report and the great work that you do in our community. We're so lucky to have such a dedicated group of men and women. But I do have a question that I have I asked last year, and I want to follow up on it regarding online reporting for, say, bicycle accidents. I know that I brought that up because we're looking, at identifying problematic areas, and some accidents go unreported because maybe they don't want to, it's not that bad, and nobody else is involved, and they just don't want to wait for a sheriff's officer. But to really identify areas that are having problems, problematic area, it's helpful to know where the most accidents are happening, even if they're minor accidents. So I'm wondering, they said they were going to be working on an online reporting system. I know the city of Santa Barbara has something going on like that. I'm just wondering.
That's correct. There is currently in progress. In fact, aren't they getting pretty close to signing that agreement? And not only be for accident, it'll be for everything. Bicycle reports, petty thefts, theft of cell phones. It'll be all-encompassing, again, to free up our staff to be out on the street, again, provide that high profile versus taking a report in a house somewhere.
That's great. Okay, thank you for that.
Well, we know we're going to have a word from Councilmember Bennett, I'm sure. Please.
You're correct. Thank you for looking my way. I appreciate that a whole bunch.
Well, I kind of gone through everybody else, so and I knew you were down there.
Well, thank you for that. I would personally like to thank both agencies for all the good work. It's been said before, but it's certainly a fact. None of this happens by accident. It happens because everyone, in fact, is well-trained and able to respond in a timely fashion and make a difference in our community. And that adds to the quality of our life and makes a difference in why people enjoy living here and why the community is as safe as it is. And that can't go unsaid. And the tremendous cooperation between both agencies is incredibly important and one that shows once again that they work very well together and accomplish the task that the community expects of them. So passing on my thanks, and I'm also looking forward in the case of the fire department with the fruition of Fire Station 10. I'm sticking with my prediction that the spring of 2018 we may see a ribbon cutting, but we'll see how successful we are in attaining that. But I'm optimistic that we'll be able to maybe pull that off. So keep plugging ahead, guys and gals. And again, I'm very optimistic. That's the time frame I'd like to see.
Did you want to say something about it? Because I want to get in a word here.
Go ahead. I will defer to you. You're the mayor.
All right. I've been on the council for 3.5 years now, and I have to say various council people become associated with different things, different projects that they have an interest in. And Councilmember Bennett in Station 10 have been synonymous since I've come into the scene here, and he has always been in any discussion we're having asking about Station 10. Are we neglecting this? How's the funding going? When are we going to turn a spade full of dirt? So when I see this thing moving forward, I have to appreciate Mr. Bennett's, Councilmember Bennett's contribution to it. And let me say in a broader sense, you know, we do a lot of bashing of the county around here over the NRA, our opportunity, our forced contribution to the welfare of the county to the tune of $5 million a year. But they have certainly done something very well with you folks, both on the sheriff's side and the fire department side. They are well-run organizations, and we're happy we have the opportunity to take advantage of your expertise. And none of it is intrusive in this community either. You know, everybody goes about their business in a quiet, efficient way, and we all appreciate that very much. And the statistics support your effectiveness, so thank you for that. We've been delighted. Yeah, Mr. Adamitis, please.
Mr. Mayor, staff just wanted to offer the opportunity for the undersheriff, Mr. Malekian, if he had any comments or things he'd like to say at this point.
Mayor and members of council, on behalf of Sheriff Bill Brown, thank you for the opportunity to be here today and for this presentation. The Sheriff's Department is honored to be able to provide policing services to the city of Goleta. We'll be in, as I know you're aware, we'll be starting discussions very shortly on renewing this contract, and we look forward to many more years of collaboration and partnership. Just speaking for myself, I've been in a few organizations in my career, and I will say that the men and women of the Santa Barbara Sheriff's Office are some of the finest professionals I've ever had the pleasure to work with. And I'd really like to thank the chief from the fire department for his kind remarks. This isn't my stepson is a firefighter, although for another organization, but you have an excellent reputation. So thank you for what you do. So I don't know if there are any questions for me, but thank you.
Thank you. That concludes. Thank you, sir. And thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, for the opportunity to do the report for you today. And we look forward to coming back next year and providing you an update.
Very good, Mr. Adamitis. And we are appreciative of your efforts, yours and Mr. Valdez. you did a terrific job, and the stats are good. The presentation was clear and very coherent, so we're delighted for it. We'll look forward to hearing what's happening next year, perhaps with the inclusion of some information on bicycle accidents.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That was a nod to Ms. Perotti. So again, gentlemen, thank you very much. You guys are terrific, and everybody appreciates your service to our city. So thank you. Can we give them a round of applause here?
Yes, we'll go ahead and go on to the consent calendar. Item B1, acceptance of the March 2016 check register. B2, Evergreen Tennis Courts Project Award of Contract. B3, Pedestrian Pathway and Lighting Project Award of Contract and Amendments to Capital Improvement Program Budget. B4, Amendment to Traffic Signal Maintenance Agreement with West Corp. B5, Purchase and Sale Agreement for 27 South Lopatera Lane, DRI. And B6, Transportation Demand Management Program, 4th Annual Report.
All right. Are there any items here that wish to be pulled by members of the council?
I'd like to pull B6.
B6.
Mr. Mayor, staff would like to pull B2 for some brief clarification before council takes action on it.
Okay. 2 and 6. Any others? That appears to be it. So may we have approval on the remaining items on the consent calendar?
So move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Now if we can look at B6. You want to start with that, and then we'll go to B2?
Sure. I just have a couple questions and a couple comments. I want to first of all thank Valerie Krushnoff for an excellent report. It's very clear, And I always anxiously look for this report to see how we're doing. My one question would be, we have 17 employees participating in the program this year, correct? Or last, well, this is for 2015.
Correct.
So what, I don't, unless I missed it, I'm not seeing anything to compare it to, like, are the numbers going up or are the numbers going down?
Thank you. Ms. Perotti, the information that we have isn't easily comparable to the previous year because of the way the statistics were compiled through the Traffic Solutions website. Okay. My understanding is it's down slightly by perhaps 2 or 3 employees, but we did have the retirement of at least one employee who used that program every single day of his career here in Goleta. And so that's the best information that I can provide for you at this moment. Perhaps Ms. Green can...
I just wanted to add that the reason why that data isn't easily available is Traffic Solutions went through a substantial upgrade of their online tool. And it's not directly compatible with the previous data that they collected. But as we move forward, we'll be rebuilding the database, so we will be able to return to the comparative statistics that we were able to provide in the past.
Okay, thank you for that. And just a comment, not a question, just a broad comment for my colleagues to consider. I had the opportunity to talk with Kent Epperson this morning, and he was telling me about a program that Sonos, they're participating in their transportation demand program, and what they do as an incentive, not only do they do an incentive of cash, but they also have an incentive where they offer a bicycle voucher. So you would take the $600 voucher and take it to Bicycle Bob's, and if you wanted to add to it, and then they would have to pay it off for every day that they ride their bike. They're paying down the bike at $10 a day. So I just wanted to put that out there and see if there was anything that the city, when we're looking at our budget, if we want to make any changes or any increase in the incentive or to get more people participating.
Can you get a one sheet on that, distribute it? Sounds very appealing to people who work here.
We would certainly be happy to look into other options. One of the survey questions you may have read was, were there other incentives that staff were interested in that would help motivate them to participate? Mm-hmm. And there weren't really the cash incentive. Based on what we have currently is the most attractive way, but we can certainly poll staff and find out and respond back to you.
Oh, we could do both, couldn't we?
We certainly could.
Okay.
And Kent Epperson said he'd be more than happy to speak with staff and share how it all worked for Sonos, if you would want to.
All right, very good. Councilmember Aceves.
Thank you. I think Councilmember Perotti and I were on the Green Energy Committee when this program first started, so it's good to see that it's still going. My question had to do with, you know, when we put this program together, our hope was to have local companies copy us and create their own TDM programs. I'm just wondering if we can come back at one point with, if we know of any companies that have done it, maybe give council an update, even by memo. And I don't know if we're still including this discussion when we do project planning and try to put it in there as far as a requirement if we have those type of agreements with a project. I don't know. I'm just speaking out of school here, but I think the idea that we have a program that's worked for years now, we want to make sure that it is copied and that our companies in Goleta get it going, if not get it better. I certainly don't want to see Sonos beating our Goleta companies.
We can consult with planning staff and get that information back to council in a memo format.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ms.
Just one more comment. Just a shout out and a congratulations to the city again for receiving our Green Business Certificate Award. And a lot of it, you know, there's a lot of prerequisites to get that, but a lot of it had to do with this particular program. So it's something that we should, as a city, be very proud of that we're doing this. But thank you so much for answering my questions.
All right. Ms. Green, would you want to comment on item two? Have we wrapped this up, more or less?
We need a motion on B6.
I'll move.
I was going to do them both together, but we can do it separately if you wish. Is there a motion to approve B6?
I'd like to move.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, Ms. Pushing her off. All right, Ms. Green.
Okay, for item B2, the Evergreen Tennis Courts Project Award of Contract, staff needs to make a correction for recommendation C. Authorize the city manager to approve contingency contract change orders if necessary in an amount not to exceed $8,350. So that $8,350 is the corrected amount. It represents a 10% contingency. So we wanted that to be clear and for council to be aware of it, and so that the motion is amended to reflect that dollar amount when it's made.
Move approval as amended.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 So if you might add 2 and 6 to the consent calendar approval. All right, it has come to our attention that we must meet in closed session. Was there anybody?
We got one more.
B1.
Oh, sorry. And a big one besides, so I'm asleep at the wheel here. All right, well, we have Kathleen Trepa, our deputy city manager, here to speak about the Goleta Library special tax ballot measure, if you would, Ms. Trepa.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, Kathleen Trepa, Deputy City Manager. The item before you this afternoon is an update on the special parcel tax the City Council has considered for the November ballot and recent action taken by the Board of Supervisors. Briefly, by way of background, as the council is aware, the city has been evaluating a special parcel tax to fund library operations for several years. And last fall, our request to place a concurrent ballot measure with the county for service, County Service Area 3 was considered by the county's Library Advisory Committee, which generated several months of dialogue among committee representatives and library advocates. In November of 2015, the council directed staff to transmit a formal request that the Board of Supervisors support a concurrent library measure with the City of Goleta. After several months of dialogue with the Library Advisory Committee, the City's request went before the Board of Supervisors on April 5th, which received unanimous support from the supervisors. County staff estimated in their staff report that the special parcel tax would range from $18 to $24 per parcel, but that the structure had yet to be determined and would require coordination with the City of Goleta. County staff also estimated that they would need about $32,000 to assist with preparing the ballot language and public information material related to the measure, and we will continue to work with county staff to coordinate this effort and potentially share consulting costs. In addition, the county clerk's office estimated that the additional cost for a ballot measure in the CSA 3 area would be in the range of $5,000 to $30,000, while city staff has estimated our election cost to be approximately $7,000 for the City of Goleta. Also, as recommended by the Library Advisory Committee, the Board of Supervisors directed county staff to work with regional representatives and committee members to evaluate other options for a regional taxing authority, such as a series of CSAs or the formation of a countywide library district, which would be utilized to implement a special parcel tax elsewhere in the county at some point in the future. And it's important to note that as this dialogue continues, we will need to ensure that if our local measure passes in November, that the property owners in Goleta and CSA 3 are not additionally taxed as part of any future efforts. I wanted to spend a few minutes to discuss the draft library budget, as obviously that is the reason we are discussing a ballot measure today. So the library receives funding through several primary sources, as noted on the slide and in the draft operating budget, which is attached to the staff report. As Measure L, as we know, was approved in 1990 by CSA 3 voters to support library operations, and that makes up about a third of the library's operating revenue. And Measure L is, those proceeds are generated in the now current CSA 3 as well as the City of Goleta, which detached from CSA 3 upon incorporation. There are almost 16,000 parcels in CSA 3. 53% are city parcels, leaving about 47% of the Measure L taxation area taxing entity to be in the county. In terms of tax proceeds, city property owners generate about 56% of the revenue compared to the county's 44%. And as a point of reference, the current tax rate is a little over $22 per single family parcel, although the actual tax is based on land use designations, and so there's a series of tax rates depending on the land use designation for each parcel. The county's per capita contribution of $7.80 accounts for about 54% of the overall funding for the library budget. The other sources of direct funding include a contribution by the city and the Friends of the Goleta Library, as well as room rentals, donations, and other items. What is not included in the library budget is support that both the Friends and the city contribute outside of the operating budget. So the Friends directly support some programming efforts, and they acquire materials. And as we all know, the city owns and maintains the library facility at no cost to library operations, which not all cities in the county do. It's also important to note that as this dialogue continues, also related to the budget that's on the slide, the draft library budget for 16-17 that is prepared by the City of Santa Barbara, they operate the library on our behalf. This one is attached to the council report, and there's some changes in the attachment compared to the slide here. This budget, the draft budget attached to the staff report only shows the city's $10,000 contribution from our Library Development Impact Fee Fund. It does not include the $30,000 in general fund monies that the council authorized for this fiscal year. So staff has had an opportunity to review our Library DIF Fund, and at this time we are recommending that the council consider a $60,000 contribution next fiscal year using Library DIF monies as a total contribution. There's presently $217,000 in the library DIF fund, and staff is projecting another $375,000 in DIF revenue from development through fiscal year 19-20, and that's based on planning projections. And I should note that if planning projections remain as forecasted, development will significantly slow down in the next several years. Therefore, additional DIF revenue will dwindle at that point. And as a reminder, DIF revenue for library DIF fees can only be used to pay for additional facilities and services and not fund current operations or maintenance. DIF revenue can be used to support the collections budget, which next year has been proposed at $150,000. The current draft budget also includes full-time staffing of all approved positions. However, the children's librarian position is currently vacant and will remain so in an effort to save approximately $100,000 in labor costs. So if the council concurs with a $60,000 DIF contribution for next year and the $100,000 in labor savings is factored in, the estimated operating deficit shown here on the slide is approximately $96,000 rather than the $245,000 that is estimated in the library's draft budget. If there are no adjustments to the draft budget, the ongoing dip into reserves to fund operations will deplete reserves by fiscal year 17-18. The adjustments I just noted potentially push back this inevitability to about fiscal year 18-19. Unfortunately, there's no denying that some significant changes need to be made to library funding or library expenditures or a combination of both in order to remain with an operating revenue. And I should note that the Goleta Library budget is already extremely lean. All of the library's budgets of the county are facing significant budget issues. Ours is not the only one. So closing the immediate budget gap to some degree is in a way kicking the can down the road, because the current budget does not take into account the pre-recession operating hours of 63 hours per week compared to the 55 we are now operating at. It doesn't account for our already slashed collections budget and the deferred replacement of furniture, computers, other technology, and other issues noted in the Ruth Metz and Associates report. It doesn't take into account the undersized facility that is nearly as much programming, attendance, and circulation as the City of Santa Barbara's main library. So if revenues are not significantly increased in the near future, costs will need to be reduced to remain with an operating revenue, and additional service cuts may be necessary. The amount each city contributes to support library operations continues to be a point of comparison. So I've included on this slide the direct contribution each agency plans to make next fiscal year to the individual library budgets as presented in the draft operating budgets that the City of Santa Barbara prepared just recently. So this chart can be a little bit misleading. It doesn't account for support outside of the operating budget, like our support of owning and maintaining the facility. And it also doesn't factor in Measure L proceeds in terms of the level of support provided by the Goleta community. So if you factor in Measure L, the per capita contribution from approximately 30,000 people who reside in Goleta is closer to $10 per person. The Measure L tax paid by local property owners provides a direct support to the library as opposed to the indirect general fund support allocated by the city. In terms of next steps, attachment 2 to the staff report includes a timeline should the council confirm its commitment to move forward with a special library parcel tax for the November ballot. First steps include working with county staff to determine a proposed tax structure and work with a consultant to craft ballot measure language, which would then come back before the city council for approval by no later than June 21st. The city council must adopt resolutions related to the ballot measure by that meeting, which then must be submitted to the county by no later than July 7th. Over the course of the summer and the fall, city staff would then pursue public education related to library operations. To support this effort, city staff will also need some professional assistance, same as the county, ideally in coordination with county staff. We've already started that conversation, and given the tight timeline, today staff is requesting that the city manager be authorized to enter into either a professional services agreement with a consultant, if we take the lead, or a reimbursement agreement with the county in a form approved by the city attorney if they take the lead on consulting support. We've budgeted $30,000 in funds already for next year's operating budget, which may be sufficient to cover this effort. But if additional funds are necessary or funds are needed for this fiscal year, we'll return to the City Council for a budget amendment and appropriation at that time. So if the Council concurs with moving forward, what we'll do is we'll include the $7,000 in election costs in the amended budget, which is going before the Council later this month in a workshop, and then for formal action in June. And we'll also include the $60,000 in library DIF monies in the amended budget if that is also approved. So our recommendations this afternoon are to direct staff to proceed with a concurrent ballot measure with the county for CSA 3 in the city of Goleta, to approve a fiscal year 16-17 contribution of $60,000 in library DIF funds to be used to support the collections budget, and to authorize the city manager to enter into an agreement not to exceed $50,000 either with the county or with a consultant for services related to the ballot measure. I'd also like to recognize that we have several people in the audience today and here representing the library, and they have been very much involved in this process. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Are there questions of Mr. Council Member Aceves?
Okay. Let me start off with the first question to be how we develop the funding mechanism. Because our current Measure L, now we're the only ones that have a Measure L in the county, is that correct?
That's correct.
So our city decided to, they voted in a parcel tax in 1990. Now this parcel tax is not adjusted for cost of living, is it?
I believe it is, yes.
Yes, it is. Okay. The street lighting parcel tax is not.
Okay. Yeah. So we've been, I guess what concerns me, if you go to that one chart where it shows other agency contributions, and you did put in that arrow where it shows that our people or our citizens are paying USAID about $10. If it was to be a per capita comparison, it'd be about $10 per.
Measure L in the city of Goleta and our $60,000 DIF equates to about $10 per capita.
With the $60,000 you're asking to put in?
Correct.
Okay, how much without the $60,000?
Oh, I'd have to do the math on that.
Wouldn't it be eight? It'd be $2 less per capita, so it'd be
eight.
Yeah.
You know, I guess my concern is that this is what gets in the public's eye. And we got a lot of emails and letters saying that City of Goleta doesn't contribute anything, which is not true, because our citizens have been taxing themselves parcels since 1990. So with this new bond measure, is it going to be a parcel tax or is it going to be a per capita tax?
It's a parcel tax.
Is the county going to go into parcel? And the county's agreed to do a CSA 30 parcel tax also.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say the proposal is that both the county and the city of Goleta place on the November ballot a similar tax measure. It would be the same tax measure for both agencies for the CSA 3 city of Goleta area, so the original boundaries of Measure L. They would need to be the same tax measure, and they would both need to pass in order to become effective on either side. So the voters in both agencies or both entities would have to pass the same tax measure.
Okay.
And just to add on to that, the analyses that staff performed last summer and fall that we brought to you back in November assumed a parcel tax with the same structure as the existing Measure L tax. So we didn't design a tax mechanism that was completely different from what was already in place. And just to remind council and our viewers, that, and Ms. Trepp already mentioned this, that has different tax rates depending on the parcel type. So what we highlight in a lot of our discussion is the single family dwelling unit parcel type, because that's the one that is the most common, and we have voters on those parcels. So, you know, that's the information that we have put out there. But what we've structured also includes a tax rate for multifamily parcels, commercial parcels, industrial parcels. That's the work that we did when we brought to you the information about what the budget impacts of that tax measure would have if it were successful.
Okay, and how would this change from per capita to parcel affect the county's contribution? Is it going to be lower? Is it going to be the same? Or is it going to be higher?
Our understanding is that it would not affect the county's per capita contribution, that this is supplementing additional funding.
So what we're showing on the slide is the contributions of revenue of several types broken down into a per capita measurement, because that's the measurement that we've had the most public interest and comment on, because of course that hits home the most of people. But we're not proposing a change in the structure from a parcel base to a per capita, and so I think that might be where there's been a little confusion. We're showing it here on the slide for information purposes, but we're not proposing a per capita tax.
No, I understand, but
okay.
we're in a parcel tax now. Mm-hmm. It's going to continue as a parcel tax. But the counties on a per capita contribution from their general fund, but now they're going to parcel tax.
So the parcel... The parcel tax would be an addition. So I've changed this slide. So imagine, if you will, another column. So we could have, a second Measure L. So we'd have the original Measure L, the county per capita. Then there'd be a new column for the next measure. And then we would still have city contributions and other sources, and that would comprise the library funding.
The county will maintain their... per capita throughout the county. We can't say at what level, because historically there have been changes. Sometimes it's gone up when they've had funds available. Sometimes they've cut it back. Sometimes it's changed in the distribution because of population in the different service zones. But from what we're hearing at this point, the county doesn't have any intention of doing away with the county per capita funds that come to the Goleta Library for the service area that it represents. So what our understanding is, and what the discussions have been, is two concurrent parcel-based tax measures and the continuation of the county per capita contribution to the Goleta Library.
Okay. It's a little confusing for me. And as we move forward, hopefully with a ballot measure, I think we have a lot of education to do.
Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Yeah, you mentioned that not every city is donating the building, basically. How many cities are donating the building or covering the cost of maintaining the building? Let's put it that way.
Well, I actually looked at it from the reverse perspective.
Either way.
Yeah, so I did check. So the three libraries, library facilities that pay rent, rent is included in their operating budgets, mm-hmm. include Guadalupe, Orcutt, and Los Alamos.
Can we see that other slide where we saw the per capita? You know which one I'm referring to?
There it is.
Guadalupe, which ones? I'm sorry, say that
again. Well, Guadalupe, Orcutt, and Los Alamos.
It's only Guadalupe's on that list.
Right.
So Guadalupe, you know, I don't want to pick on Guadalupe, but they give the lease and they also charge rent.
The Guadalupe Library pays rent. There's a rent charge associated with their facility. Okay. Yeah.
And have we factored in some kind of cost for that? Like, I think what Councilman Aceves was saying is the same thing I'm saying, that we saw it in the NewsHawk article that Goleta doesn't put any money in its library. And when you factor in Measure L and the free rent, and I'm not suggesting we charge rent, don't get me wrong, that I think we need to make the public aware that that the city is already, doing what it can, and I don't want to get into the RNA agreement again,
right,
but
right.
Have we factored in something along those lines?
We have in previous staff reports, and we should summarize it moving forward. So as we begin to do public information regarding the city's support, we factor in the maintenance, we factor in any anticipated facility investments that we intend to make over time. And so we've done a lot of work pulling all of that together, and we can add that into the per capita evaluation that seems to be used as a benchmark for how the cities are supporting the library.
And along those lines of the county per capita contribution they make, if they elected to change their per capita contribution, they have to do that system-wide, right? Or can they actually, like, identify Goleta and say we're going to give a little bit less to Goleta? I mean, I know if population changes, that changes it, but the actual per capita rate is system-wide, isn't it?
It is system-wide. If they were to change their policy completely, which we don't anticipate, then it's possible that they could look at a reduced amount for the Goleta community. We haven't heard any inkling that they're considering that. But the way it's set up now, it is countywide, so it's a flat amount that's distributed evenly for every person in the whole county, regardless of what library service area that they're in.
Okay. All right, that's my question.
Councilmember Aceves.
You know, I think it's important to note that what we're talking about is trying to show that we've contributed substantially, but still we don't have enough money to fund the library. And that's the argument for the ballot measure, is that we haven't increased, you know, we've had this since 1990. We haven't gone back to the public for a new income cent. I mean, 26 years is a long time. We don't have any more available money to give, and that's why we need the parcel tax, or the parcel tax. But I guess it's just that I want the public to know that we have contributed substantially, mm-hmm. not only in providing the building, but the maintenance, contributions, and then the work of the Friends. We've done everything we can, but now it's time to go back to the public after 26 years. And I think that's the argument we want to make.
Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, I think that Councilmember Aceves and Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo have put the information out as I see the information. Unfortunately, that information's been resisted by almost all the cities that you see up there, if not all the cities, for reasons that are inexplicable to me. They don't look at that Measure L as money coming from the citizens. But we all know it comes out of the citizens' directly. Pockets, yeah. Whether it comes out of a general fund or if it comes out of a special election, which is where Measure L came from. So I would agree with everything you've said. But just to note, there are people that serve on the county's library committee that don't agree with that at all and look upon that as that's a non-issue, that's not the way it is. And I don't know how they can think like that, but that's how they think. So I just want you to know that's the issue. And it was put into a per capita basis, which I think is very confusing because our parcel tax doesn't deal with that. But they did that to try to provide some comparison so that we could compare apples with apples, if you will. But they weren't including our Measure L, although we were pretty adamant that Measure L needed to be included to reflect the parcel, to reflect the per capita from the parcel tax application. So ultimately, I think they know that's how we feel. They know that's what we're looking at. And now that we're looking at a local issue, rather than a countywide issue, which at one point that's what was being looked at, I think it has become a non-issue because we don't have to deal with those other agencies as to what they think or what they don't think. So it's just us and the county. And the county does contribute, as previously stated, countywide. They have a bag of money and they divide it by the 445,000 people that live in the county, which comes up with per capita amount. And this last year, I believe it went up about $1.
Mm-hmm. It did a year ago, went up $1.
Yeah, so, and it's been down, however. I mean, it's been cut back. I think it's been as low as $5 or $5.50 in the past. So as our city manager said, it's one of those things that can in fact be reduced or increased. So that's not a reflection on what we're doing, because it applies to everyone. So your points are absolutely well taken. I strongly concur that Measure L is our contribution by our citizens, as it is in the unincorporated area by those citizens. And so we can no longer operate the library at the current level, which is a very reduced level, lower hours, as was previously stated. We've eaten up the reserves. That's another thing that hasn't been emphasized, but there was a sizable reserve fund, and that reserve fund is going to be extended another 2 years by moving forward with the budget that's being proposed, but that's without a child librarian, which saves $100,000 by not filling that position, which really impacts the service and the quality of what we're doing over there. So for me, that's not an answer. That's a reaction as opposed to an answer, and it's kicking the can down the road, because even with that cutback, we will have burnt up the reserves without any additional income coming to the library by 2018. And that's just the sad facts of it all. I mean, the numbers speak very clearly themselves, and it's time for us to, like you said, after 26 years, it's time for us to ask the public if in fact the library is that important to them to be able to support it, so that we can keep a viable library service in our community. And I think they'll come around. I think they'll be supportive as they understand the issue, as we have this outreach and education as to what the issue is.
All right. Are there other comments from council members? Yeah, Ms. Perotti.
Well, I sit on the ad hoc library committee meeting with Councilmember Bennett, and I think we've been talking about this for a very long time, and it's time to move forward with it. I just wish we had gotten started maybe 5 months ago. We have a lot of outreach, education outreach, but I think if we put our heads to it, and it can be done. So I hope that we could just move this along.
All right, we have a wish to comment on this subject from Ms. Kissler. Pat Kissler, if you come forward to the podium and share your opinions with us.
Greetings. Hello, Mayor, City Council. I just first want to say thank you very much for allowing me to come aboard on the Library Advisory Committee. What a time to do it, right? Just jump right in. I do want to say some things that weren't said because we didn't have time, as how hard this committee worked and how many extra meetings that we put in, driving all the way up to Santa Ynez and Lake Kachuma each time, and to find another way around this current situation that we're in it now that has been presented to you. And I want you to know that we discussed at length. First of all, there were 17 libraries involved in every single meeting. I think the tables were filled. We were all very interested in making sure that each library gets funded and what way we could possibly do this. We looked at a ballot measure, of course, that's been mentioned. The librarians then went back to their friends, and that was not a popular countywide way to go. It just came back as, don't think that's going to happen countywide. But we wanted you to know that we did do that. We also were looking at maybe doing a community facilities district or community service district to try to come up with a new service area that maybe changes the way the libraries are funded. I mean, we were really trying to, put the pedal to the metal to keep this library and their needs functioning. And of course, the other libraries, even though it's not said, they're short too. Their budgets are short also. So I just, wanted to say that the Friends Group, God bless their heart, they've done everything they can do. And most of the libraries, it's just amazing when you hear the report every couple months, they talk about what they do for their libraries, and this Friends Group is out of sight. They are really, really supportive of your library. the funding situation with C, is it CW3 or C?
CSA3.
CSA3, thank you, is very unusual. It's very unusual. I mean, here we are with it, and we need to deal with it because we've got some wonderful people that live in that area that expect the library to be open for them, for their families. And we're really, really close to UCSB, so I'm sure in a late-night attempt to get some work done, the UCSB students are over there working away. And we have a librarian that works and works and tries to balance the budget, and with the loss of the children's librarian is, I can't believe it, but that is the way it is given now. So I just wanted to say that everyone that did this, all volunteers, met up at Lake Kachuma and tried every way possible. We even talked to a political advocate for libraries and tried to put together some way to go that way that they work. I guess it's free, isn't it, that they do? So we tried. And so I wanted you to know that I really appreciate the time that everyone spent doing that. Any questions of me? Thank you for letting me be on this committee. It's going to be interesting.
Thank you. Well, thank you for your service. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
I have another speaker slip here from Corinne Horowitz. Is that correct? Corinne.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
So good afternoon, Mayor Farr, council members. Everybody, I think, knows me well because I've been advocating for the Goleta Library for now many years. First of all, I live in the county in CSA 3 area, so I would like to make sure that everybody in the Goleta City Council realizes that we pay just the same in Measure L as the citizens of Goleta, so we're not getting a free ride at all. Also, incidentally, I shop at Costco, so my taxes go straight to Goleta, so I feel I'm supporting the city of Goleta, so please give a little bit back instead of always making us feel like we're taking and never giving, because that's not quite true. Okay, so that was now that I had my heart out. We are in favor of the ballot measure. Yes, we all voted, as I think it was 81 or 86% in 1992, for the ballot measure when we were losing Judy Savage, our children's librarian. And I think there will be great support from the Friends, definitely, and also from other patrons of the library. If you look at the number of the library cards held by patrons, which is not actually quite accurate, because, for example, a family of four or five, you could have one library card. So you have to multiply that. There is more than just a straight number. About two-thirds of your citizens and of the CSA 3 citizens are going to the Goleta Library. It's an important community resource. 500,000 visits, 600,000 items circulated every year. And I think those numbers really are reflected in the love that the Goleta and the CSA 3 citizens have for their library. We really value it. And it is, a measure of civic pride for the Goleta residents. Goleta doesn't have an institution that people can rally around. There is no city hall. There is no opera. There is no theater. When you grow up, you don't really remember with great nostalgia the time you spent shopping at Kmart. You remember the times you were at the library. You remember listening to stories. You remember the education you received for free. And as a city, I think it's our duty to fund our library because that is the future of our population. And that is extremely important. It's a matter, I think, a matter of civic pride to have one institution in Goleta that is not entirely commercially based or for profit. Businesses come and go. Libraries stay. We hope that 50, 60 years from now, the citizens of Goleta and of the surrounding county areas will still be able to say, I'm proud of my library and I'm proud of the education I got, my children got, my grandchildren are getting at the library. Incidentally, losing the children's librarian is going to be really a catastrophe on many, many areas. First of all, it is going to increase tremendously the work of the staff, which is already understaffed and overworked. Second, as you know, children's programs in libraries are free and are attended by many children. Well, we're right across from the junior high. You're going to find that these kids who have no programs now, well, what do you do? Many of them are latchkey kids, 13, 14, 15. There's no parent at home, two salaries to live in our area. The library programs, we're keeping them out of trouble. If we have to close the library 2 days a week, same thing, because these kids won't be finding someplace safe to stay and work after hours. So, yes, you spend on the library, but you save on juvenile hall. It's a win situation, in my opinion. So I hope the ballot measure is going to pass. I would like to thank you for all the funding you are going to give us, and also to thank you for your support, because really, you're right, this ballot measure is long overdue, and we need more funding for something that should be the jewel and the pride of Goleta. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your contribution to the Goleta Library. It's very much appreciate that. All right, we have, I suppose, a moment's deliberation and then a vote. Does anybody want to comment on this to start with? Yeah, Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, I would just like to say that I think that, you know, we've looked at this thing for about 3 years, about a year before 2014 election period, and continuing on for the last 2 years. And we've looked at other sources, as been reported this afternoon, looked at a countywide effort versus just a local effort, and now we're back to the local effort. But I think that that's all critically important, and as Corrine just mentioned, certainly the CSA contribution is an equal contribution of what the city residents pay. So I didn't mean to imply or suggest that they're not participating or that anybody's getting a free ride, because they're not. It's essentially all the same, because all residents, whether they're a part of the city or the unincorporated area, are receiving the same per capita, and they're paying the same parcel tax. So that's something we're doing jointly and doing the best we can. But as been pointed out, it's not enough. And we've cut back. We're not anywhere near where the library staffing was in the early 2000s. And we certainly aren't anywhere near where we were just before the recession. So it's just been a constant cutback, and we're basically at the bare bones. We may even have lost some bones in this thing as the cutbacks have continued. So I would hope the council would agree and be affirmative on the request by staff to go forward with the staff recommendations B, C, and D.
All right. Other comments? Yeah, Council Member Aceves.
I actually wanted to move this item forward, but I had a question for staff regarding the $60,000 contribution. It says to the library collections budget. Is that where you want it, or do you want it? I mean, I'm kind of wondering if somehow we couldn't put money together to get that librarian back.
The DIF revenue can only be used for expanding library services or facilities, but it specifically allows for applying funds to the collections budget.
So maybe they can pull the collections money and
right. Yeah, so okay. It'll allow the city of Santa Barbara to shift funds.
All right. Then why don't we just go ahead and move this forward? I would move that we direct staff to proceed with the preparation of a special parcel tax for the Goleta Library placed on the November 2016 ballot, concurrently with a companion County of Santa Barbara measure for CSA 3, and that we approve from the 16-17 budget $60,000. Contribution to the library's collections budget, and three, that we authorize the city manager to enter into professional services or reimbursement agreement with the county with the amount not to exceed $50,000.
I'd second that.
It's all those in favor of this measure say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously.
Who's going to oppose that one?
I'm afraid to.
Nobody in public, that's for sure. Nicely done, Ms. Trepa. Thank you very much for that. And the council, I think, acquitted itself very well. And another reason to take pride to be in the city. So it has come to my attention that there's a need to meet in closed session. Is there anybody who wanted to comment on the matters we're going to be speaking on in closed session? Apparently not. Madam Clerk, you didn't want to comment, did you? All right, thank you very much. And so
we need to report out.
Oh, yeah. If you would, Mr. Giles.
The City Council will be meeting with legal counsel on two matters, pending litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.91 with regard to matter City of Goleta versus Bodiani Properties, Mark Bodiani, and also a matter of anticipated litigation pursuant to Section 54956.9D2, a matter of threatened litigation. No reportable action is anticipated.
All right. With that, the afternoon session of the Goleta City Council is ended, and we go into closed session.
Did you ever feel your heart stand still? I don't care who held you tightly. I don't care who saw you nightly or who shared your kiss. But did you ever love? I'll never be the same. Stars have lost their meaning for me. I'll never be the same. Nothing's what it once used to be. And when the sun that sing tell me it's spring, I can't believe their song. Once love was king.
Order the evening session of the Goleta City Council. Will you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you call the roll?
Councilmember Perotti?
Here.
Councilmember Bennett?
Here.
Councilmember Aceves?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Vallejo?
Here.
Mayor Farr.
Here. And now we would like to hear from the city attorney as whether there is a report from closed session.
The city council did meet in closed session this afternoon on two matters, conference with legal counsel that are identified in the agenda. No reportable action was taken in that meeting.
All right. Now it's time for public forum. We have no speaker slips. Is that correct?
There are no speaker slips.
All right, very good. So are there any amendments or adjustments to the agenda?
We don't have any amendments or adjustments.
All right, very good. All right, now we are round to number D, and I think this is time for Madam Clerk to read the item.
D1, South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety Update.
Good evening, Mayor Farr, members of the council. I want to begin by saying thank you to the city of Goleta and the council for your support throughout all the years that the task force has been in, working, not just as the coordinator of the task force, but also as a resident of Goleta for the last 10 years. And so it's an honor to not only work here in the city, but also live here.
So I thank you for your time to provide an update of where the South Coast Task Force, now referred to as the South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety, is. We had a different name. We had the South Coast Task Force on Youth Gangs. And really brief, you know, we started, the effort started as a result of an increase in youth homicides and youth violence with relation to gang in 2007. And, you know, there was three high-profile homicides that really moved the community. Two of those happened to be my students when I used to work. Two of the victims were my students when I worked directly with them at El Puente High School. And then, you know, many years later, I find myself doing this work of coordination. But want to mention them because, it's been 9 years since the first one on March 14th. And so I really brought the communities together. Some of the questions was, you know, who's responsible? Who's going to address this? And at the time, after a lot of community input and feedback, it was determined that there was enough resources, but the left hand and the right hand didn't know what each one was doing. And so really it was intentional that what was lacking was coordination among strategy, services, departments, government, community. Everybody wanted to do their own thing. And so really bringing it all together, connecting dots, and really addressing, you know, where are we at and where do we want to be, addressing goals, and you'll hear some numbers as we move forward. And so we've been in operation now for 5 years, since 2010 as the task force. And in 2015, the strategy team, which is made up of members of the task force, determined that it was important to refocus and really adjust to where we want to go in the next 5 years, given the information that we knew at the time. So we launched this Mission 2020 report. We set out through the whole year to really gather input, gather feedback as to see where we wanted to go, where the community wanted to go for the next 5 years, and what have we achieved in the last 5 years. And so that work was done, 34 interviews that range from law enforcement, elected officials, Mayor Perotti was interviewed, city manager was also interviewed as part of those interviews and provided a lot of good feedback, as well as Officer Dave Valadez, who also participates on the strategy team on a monthly, every month when the strategy team meets. Council Member Paula Perotti is part of the task force and represents the task force. And also want to acknowledge Roger Aceves for being there from the beginning, really bringing the partnership of the city of Goleta to this task force with the other cities in the county. And so with that work, we interviewed 34 people, gathered some good feedback, and what was determined by all 34, with the exception of one, was that the task force should keep going, that we needed to keep going with the work, that now was not the time to say mission accomplished, close shop, because what we've learned from history, or haven't learned from history, is that when we do that, we see the issue rise back up again. We see the crime rates come back up, and we see when nobody's paying attention, it's easy for people to go back to their silos. Since the beginning of the task force, about 62% of the members, we've had about 62% turnover. New members have come to the task force, and it's been important to re-engage them and continue engaging them and having the conversations of, you know, how do we address this issue of youth violence. It's not where it used to be, but it's still something that we want to remain vigilant and address. And so the approved decisions that came out of the Mission 2020 work was to continue in the role of convener, that we were not to get into program operations. We do not operate programs. Community Action operates programs, probation, the schools, many community-based organizations operate programs, that we were the convener of strategies and the convener of community to come together and address this. With that, was proposed that the name be changed to the South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety. Also to redirect the focus to include prevention. We were very focused on intervention, on the target population, which was youth on probation that had gang terms and conditions that have been found guilty of a crime. Moving forward, we've incorporated prevention and looking at prevention strategies. Referring to youth as youth in at-risk situations rather than at-risk youth. We adopted a new mission statement and updated our guiding principles for the task force. The mission of the South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety is to improve and support the safety and quality of youth, their lives, the youth, their families, and the community. And very intentional to include families as part of the youth and not just the youth themselves, but we want to make sure that programs are also working with the parents and providing that support. Our guiding principles, the first one, to remain as a convener. Second, to advocate for a collective community effort. We know not one agency, one program, or one jurisdiction has all the solutions or all the issues, but that we all share them across the South Coast and the south part of the county. And sometimes we even get some from Santa Maria that ends up here in our neighborhoods in the south part of the county. So we want to also be in collaboration with what happens in the North County. Provide opportunities for youth in at-risk situation and parents to provide input in the process. To advocate for a full range of comprehensive services for youth and their families, and you know, rather than prescribe, really hear from youth and families what are their needs in programs that are serving youth. Advocate for needs for male and female. As we saw the numbers decrease throughout the years, we knew what we also saw was that the female population numbers weren't decreasing at the same rate as the male population. And so about 2012, 2013, programs were created in the community to address the fact that we'd seen a decrease in the male population, but with the female population, we hadn't seen the similar decrease. Advocate for evidence-based and promising programs so we can evaluate outcomes. It's been a challenge to evaluate programs from the beginning. A lot of the programs don't track data or don't have that opportunity. Advocate for client-specific services based on individual needs of their youth and their families rather than prescribe what we want to give them. Advocate for prevention and intervention services to youth in at-risk situations. And be patient, because we know that the problem didn't occur overnight, and we're not going to solve where we want to go overnight either. So with that, out of the feedback collected through the Mission 2020, it was also very clear that there was things we needed to accomplish in the next 5 years. There was work that needed to get done. And although the numbers have decreased, one of the things that we've seen is an increase in mental health needs. We keep hearing from the school districts, both the Santa Barbara Unified School District that has the schools here in Goleta, as well as the Carpinteria School District in the region, that the mental health needs are there, and there's needs. And so really creating an initiative to bring partners together. Fran Wagonet, assistant superintendent from the Santa Barbara School District, is the lead, and she's partnering with Fran Foreman, Tracy Langwood, who directs the 211 line, as well as Barnaby from the City of Carpinteria Unified School District, and Steve DeLero from the Probation Department, really assess what's available, what's missing, and what are the opportunities here with regards to mental health. A jobs and job skills connection program. We know that there's county programs, there's city programs, there's new programs that chambers of commerce are developing in partnership with other people, but really bringing it all together to have a centralized data of where these employments are, what's missing, what's the eligibility for youth, and how do we connect those dots. A pilot program, entering program of expedited services to a small cohort of youth leaving Los Prietos Boys Camp, and really working as they return into the community, whether they be returning to Goleta, Santa Barbara, Carpinteria, and really expediting those services they need rather than allowing them to fall back into the old habits or the old system that pretty much got them in trouble in the first place. Service provider coordination. For now, there's been a service provider network, and you'll see some of the organizations that are a part of that, and really bringing providers together on a more consistent basis, but really for the, you know, to talk more about the programmatical level, to continue engagement. The service providers shared themselves through an evaluation process that they wanted to be more in contact, they wanted to be more engaged with each other, know of what services each other were providing and how to access that. And so we've developed the service provider, South Coast Service Provider Network, that meets on a bi-monthly basis. And going forward, some of the work with that is partnering with 211 to really connect families in the community through the use of 211, us able to monitor the calls that for services that are being done through 211, as well as work with the truancy program to connect families that are on the path to becoming chronically truant with the appropriate services to intervene before they reach our probation or before they get into further trouble. And then evaluation and training and technical assistance for community-based organizations. We found that a lot of organizations don't track data, and part of the reason is they don't know how. And so really partnering with UCSB, being intentional of providing technical support but also training to allow organizations to be able to track data that then we can collect and use collaboratively. A youth service inventory through the 211 line. We used to print one up every year. We used to put up a lot of resources. By a couple months later, it was outdated because of program changes, staff moving. And so really 211 serving as that hub of real-time updated information for the community and us having the connection, really making sure that our partner organizations are listed in there and the families can access them. And then the coordinator's work plan, which is it's my work, really working with updating councils throughout the South Coast twice a year, as well as meeting with task force members individually twice per year to gather feedback, concerns, answer questions, and really have communication, increase the communication between task force and the work that goes on. Some numbers, some quick numbers. In 2009 in the South Coast, we had 245 youth unduplicated that were on probation with gang terms and conditions. They were found guilty of a gang crime. In 2015 in the South Coast, we went down to 62 youth. And that's a 75% decrease since 2009, since we started. Specifically to the city of Goleta, there was 67 youth with gang terms and conditions. And in 2015, that dropped to 18 youth. Overall, as a region, we've also, through the partnerships, we've been able to achieve a lot of relationships that have allowed programs to apply for funds and bring resources to the community that provide services to Goleta residents, Santa Barbara, and Carpinteria, as well as the unincorporated parts of the county. Overall, through our partnerships, we've been able to secure $3.3 million of state funds to provide services. And what that's resulted is 449 youth being served with intervention programs, receiving individual care and individual attention type programs, and then 3,186 youth receiving in-school prevention programs through these resources. That equaling 3,600 youth throughout the South Coast receiving programming to prevent and decrease youth violence, as well as 396 parents in the South Coast up to the end of 2015. And really keeping in mind parents and the work that, you know, it's not, you can't just work with youth, but also have to involve the parents. Our partner agencies, some of the partners that do work in the community, and this is not an end-all, be-all list. This is just members that have been coming to the service provider network and been a part of it. There's 18 of them that include Alternatives to Violence Project, Offer One, Casa de la Raza, CALM, City of Santa Barbara Police Activities League, Employment Program, County of Santa Barbara Workforce Development Board with employment for youth in this area, Life in Focus, which meets at the Goleta Valley Community Center, UCSB Gewurz Graduate School of Education, and Youth Interactive, who provides entrepreneurship type of skills to youth and families in the community. And that's, brief presentation. Just wanted to share some of updates as to the work that's gone on in the last year and where we're at today and some of the work going forward with the seven initiatives that were drafted through the feedback collected from the Mission 2020 report. And so, you know, I think that, again, you know, there's a lot of work that's been done as a task force, as a convening body, and through the partner organizations. And so just wanted to say thank you once again to the City of Goleta for partnering and being a part of the success that we've seen in the South Coast in the last 5 years.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Serrano. Are there questions from the council? Yeah. Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Well, thank you, first of all, UN and Fran and CAC for everything you do. I did have a couple questions. I think I asked this before, but I think you start with in the junior high level. Is that right?
Ages 14 to 18 are what some of the programs, partner programs provide. And so now, you know, now moving the scope, especially with mental health, you know, we want to be able to connect families mm-hmm. younger, because we know the issue doesn't, the consequences, we start seeing the consequences in junior high, mm-hmm. but the issues are there since elementary, or even since preschool age.
Yeah, and that was going to be my question, too. It seems like you should try, and I realize you can only do so much with the funding and everything else, but you should probably try and start earlier then, I think is what you're mm-hmm. saying, right?
Right.
Especially the younger brothers and sisters of people who are already in the gang life, for lack of a better term.
Correct, absolutely. We're in agreement with that, and it's, you know, it's, we got to knock a few bricks down before we can sure. get to that part of the wall.
Okay. And then I didn't see them on there, and I bring it up only because when it comes to job training and stuff, partners in education, they're already doing, you know, mock interviews and things like that. Have you guys reached out to them to see if they want to help?
We haven't yet. That's in our radar to reach out to them and include them along with the Chambers of Commerce, Youth Interactive, Partners in Education, and a few other grassroots organizations that provide that.
And I know at the high school level they have something called the Bridges Program for students who may or may not get to the university or you know, college-educated kind of career path, mm-hmm. where they try and get kids to guide them towards a career. So that would be another one that, you know, same idea. They're already, I know their funding's limited, so you might have to help them with that. But
right.
Same, you know, and I saw the Santa Barbara Chamber starting some program. Maybe that's who you're referring to, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can twist a few arms at the Goleta Chamber, too, if we need to.
And we've been working with Kristen Miller to bring some of her constituents to bring this in. And, you know, we made that connection with Kristen thanks to Dave Valadez from your city.
Oh, very good job, Dave. Great. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions of council? Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, I just wanted to offer my thank you as well. And it's not often we get to see programs that show results. We often see a lot of governmental programs and nonprofits that work together, but the results are sometimes difficult to determine. And I think the statistics here kind of speak for themselves. And I think that coordinating that which was already there and improving that which was already there for the most part and having everyone speak to each other is just a tremendous accomplishment. It shows what can happen mm-hmm. when everybody works hand in hand. So I really want to thank you, and I want to thank you for your leadership and for CAC picking this up and taking that coordination role and helping everyone get into the habit of talking to each other and helping each other. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Councilmember Perotti.
Well, I'd like to echo praise here. Having been appointed to be on this task force, it's been really a worthwhile experience listening to everybody around the table on what everybody is putting their collective heads together and really working together. And I'm really, really pleased that we're working towards prevention. We're looking at that aspect of it because I think we are in a position where we had to do intervention, and now we're getting the numbers down, and we see the real need to be proactive and really prevention and intervention. So I think it's been a great task force to sit on, and I think everybody on it works very hard and works well together, and thank you for all your hard work that you do, coordinating everything. And I'm really pleased that you came tonight and shared. I share somewhat with the council, but it's usually by the end of the night and everybody probably wants to go home. So it's really great to hear from you, and you do a much better job at sharing
exactly
what's happening. So thank you for your hard work, and thank you, Fran.
Thank you. I did want to remind the council that, you know, in case we were to see an increase in youth violence, we're ready to respond, and you know, we're not moving away from that. We're continuing to observe that as we spread the focus to or open the focus to include prevention. But we're still going to focus also on intervention.
Very good. Other comments from council members? All right. Very good. And don't let Ms. Perotti tell you she doesn't advocate for you at every moment she has the opportunity, because she does.
Thank you.
So yeah, and we all appreciate the efforts you're making here, and it looks like it's moving in the right direction. So kudos for that. So thank you, Mr. Serrano.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we are having a change here. It was to be Mr. Winslow. Did I overhear you to say he was not well?
Mayor Farno, James is looking pretty sick. I sent him home. yeah, he's a trooper, and he wanted to try and stick it out. But so I think I can handle it.
No CPR practice tonight, then, huh?
Item E1, Measure A, 5-year program of projects for fiscal year 2016 through 2021.
All right. Ms. Gagliano, if you would inform us about the things that we put here.
Thank you. So I'm Rosemary Gaglione, the Public Works Director, and I'm here to give you an overview of the Measure A program of projects for the next 5 years. So the Measure A was adopted in 2008. It's a local 0.5% sales tax that's going to be in place over 30 years. Expected to generate a little over $1 billion during that time. It's administered by SBCAG. And the way that it's split up, the US 101 project gets 13.4%, and North and South County each split have a 43.3% each. It's estimated that we will pull in $186 million over the next 5 years. In Goleta, that looks like about $7.7 million for us. And as you're going to see, our alternative transportation percentage currently sits at 34%. We are required to spend 10% of those monies on alternative transportation, but we're up at 34%, which I think really shows the city's commitment towards moving those projects forward. This table just gives the split, and you can see the light blue is those alternative transportation projects. The darker blue is maintenance and construction of roadways and bridges and assorted other things that we do to maintain our roadways. So this hearing is required annually. We present the program of projects, the POP. We identify all of the projects we anticipate spending our Measure A discretionary money on over the five-year period. We've added some new projects to the POP this time around, which are the Lopatera Drainage Project, some traffic signal interconnects, bus stop improvements, a Kyriel sidewalk infill, and Magnolia sidewalk infill in Old Town. Some of our roadway projects in the POP are our Las Vegas San Pedro Creek Drainage Project. Even though that's wrapping up, we will still see these projects until this year is completely closed out in the next program of projects. San Jose Creek Phase 2, which is our Hollister Avenue Bridge Replacement, Cathedral Oaks Crib Wall, Cathedral Oaks Landscaping, and Goleta 101 Overcrossing, which toward the end of this fiscal year, very beginning of next, we're going to be bringing you a contract to reboot the 101 Overcrossing projects. And projects that will be in construction this summer, the pedestrian path and lighting project, the Boys and Girls Club, our Hollister Class 1 multi-purpose path, and the Hollister Avenue crosswalk improvements at Orange. So our current alternative transportation expenditures, we have crosswalk safety at various locations, our crosswalk improvements at Kyriel, Kingston, and Hollister and Chapel, which that's matches to grant money we received. Fairview sidewalk infill at Kyriel US 101, which we're also, that's match money towards grants. Fairview sidewalk infill at Stowe Canyon Road, also matching to grants. Our complete streets, matching to our Tiger grant. Maria Ignacio bike path lighting, which also we have grant money, as well as our Old Town sidewalk infill and Ward Class 2 bike lanes. So most of these we are using our Measure A discretionary to match grants, so we can leverage that money and get the greatest bang for the bucks that we do have. What you're being asked in this resolution is to approve this five-year program of projects, agree to the maintenance of effort requirement, which currently this year is $576,000. This is averages over 5 years, though. So right now, adjusted for inflation, we're looking at having to spend about $2.9 million of discretionary funds, such as general fund monies, on road projects or street lighting, because there is that provision. The other thing you're agreeing to is the supplement and not supplant rule, where we're saying we're not taking away monies that we've traditionally spent on transportation projects. We're keeping those monies, and then we're adding Measure A monies to that. So that concludes my presentation, and I'm available for questions.
All right. Are there questions of council for Ms. Gaglione? Well, I had a few here. And the Goleta 101 overcrossing, is that the hypothetical one between Stork and Winchester?
Yes, Mayor Farr.
And what can you give us just... what might be a timetable if you're sitting back at the end of the week wondering when that might happen? What would be your guess on that?
Well, we could begin reboot our environmental, what we call our project approval and environmental document phase. If we began that, that's a 2 to 3 year process. We still have to go through the CEQA process, finish that up to determine what is the recommended alternative alignment. After that would be right-of-way and final design, which would be another 2 or 3 years. The issue is that right now the project in SBCAG's project list is out closer to 2030. So we're continuing to move forward. We're applying for grant monies because the more ready we can have the project, then we can potentially ask SBCAG to move the project up in their priority list.
All right. Are they impressed with the acquisition of grant money, SBCAG?
I would hope so.
Well, and that does, I don't see any reference to that here, but you have a reputation around here for being very good at acquiring grants. It might not hurt to put it in here, you know, and so we could laud you for your efforts on that, because it's actually, you have been extraordinarily productive in that area, so.
Well, yes, and my staff's work very hard, so they do a really good job. I don't know that they want to see that in this particular report, but we do. We try to we consider all of these monies valuable, and we try to leverage those as much as possible.
All right. Now, if we were to look in a crystal ball, and I know this is way beyond the ability of anybody to predict what will happen, what do you see as the widening of 101 through Montecito?
You know, I would imagine that, I don't know if Council Member Bennett would want to weigh in on that. I'm not following that as closely.
Well, we knew he wouldn't be shy about it, so if you would, sir.
Well, the 101 project, the third phase actually is going to begin this summer. Around August the 1st is anticipated for the new bridges that will be built. You'll have Casitas Pass, and you'll have the Carpinteria Creek Bridge involved in that, and also the Linden Avenue Bridge. So those all have to be done first before anything can be done on widening. The widening project right now has been bifurcated between Caltrans and SBCAG's own contract engineer. And so they're going to do the half, if I remember correctly, they're doing the half from Midway. It's a 10-mile project. They're doing the project from Carpinteria up 5 miles. That'll be Caltrans. And SBCAG is taking the portion from where that midpoint is up to Hot Springs, and we'll be managing that particular portion. It's still one of the questions as it goes forward is to how this project may in fact be broken up. It's been discussed, and no decisions have been made that I'm aware of, that it may in fact be 4 different phases as it goes forward, but that could be reduced to lesser phases to make it all happen. But the expectation overall is that it'll take about 10 years for this whole process to be complete. And while they're doing the bridges, for example, under construction, the design work continues. And even though we had a bit of a setback on the EIR, certain components of it having to be redone, we've continued on with the design work. So that has not been delayed at all. So that's real important. It's critical. And we'll continue to move forward with that. Tied in with this is the FAST Act that the federal government passed this last year, which is now a 5-year commitment for funding of road projects, which is the first time they've done that in quite some time. And we went back to Washington, D.C., as you might recall, back in February, and that discussion was all predicated on money to go towards Highway 101 and the improvements that are necessary there and the importance of the freight traffic that occurs and so on. And we got some pretty decent ideas back as to how we might approach that in trying to pursue additional federal money to complete the project. So that's about the best I can do at this stage of the game. And actually right now, and it's of course subject to change, the overpass that you were inquiring about is on schedule under the current matrix, 2027. So, but that can be changed as funds become available, as our public works director indicated, that could be moved forward. And it's not a hypothetical project because the voters voted for it. And there's $7 million allocated through Measure A specifically for that project. So it's a named project. It will get done.
What will be the contribution of SBCAG to that project? Are we expected to raise a lot of the money ourselves on the overpass?
The project contribution I just gave you, it's $7 million. That's part of the half a cent sales tax that goes to SBCAG.
But what is the thing's $20 million or up, right?
Yes. So we're guaranteed $7 million in Measure A money, as Councilmember Bennett said. There is, in those outer years, if we were to wait, then there's another $6 million that could be had towards, they've moved it into right-of-way. So there's, you know, there's a lot to be discussed in terms, but the minimum that we're guaranteed on that is the $7 million. And yes, so we are looking to raise grant money. When you're looking to get grant money, especially on a larger project, the farther along you are, the more competitive. It shows you have a lot of skin in the game, you're serious. You know, you aren't suddenly going to stumble on some unknown thing that shows up during your design process. So that's what we're banking on, to continue to move this forward so that we'll be able to secure some grant money sometime and hopefully the very near future.
Oh, that would be great. Has there been a resolution of Santa Barbara's lawsuit against the widening?
No, that's ongoing, and it's in the process. The judge ruled that there were certain things that needed to be accomplished, and Caltrans is in the process of going forward with that.
All right, very good. Are there any other questions?
Well, I'd like to get back to this item, so if you'd open the public hearing and close it, I'll make a motion to move forward.
Yeah, I guess that's a no. You have no questions then.
Well, I have no questions.
All right. So that we'll open the public hearing on this. Is there a public to be heard from?
There are no speaker slips.
All right, so let's close this. Do I need to use the gavel on this? No. All right. Well, let's consider this hearing closed then. All right. Thank you, Ms. Gagliani. We appreciate your...
We're not done yet. I'd like to make a motion that we adopt resolution number 16X in order entitled a resolution of the City Council of the City of Goleta, California adopting the Measure A five-year local program of projects for fiscal year 2016-17 through 2021.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. It passes unanimously. Are they opposed, I should say? No. Thank you. Passes unanimously. Thank you, Rosemary. And thank you, Roger, for keeping me on my toes here. All right. So we are now down to a presentation from MTD. Would you, Madam Clerk?
F1 MTD 2016 Draft Public Transit Service Plan.
Good evening, Mayor Farr. Council members, I'm Jerry Estrada, General Manager, Santa Barbara Metropolitan Transit District. I want to thank you for the opportunity tonight to present our proposed changes for public transit for this August 2016. Where we are at this point in the process is MTD started its work plan a year ago, and our planning manager, Georgia Moon, who's with me today, will be providing the presentation. At that time, the focus from our board of directors was primarily the city of Goleta. And we spent a lot of time, staff, over the past year, and Georgia will go through that in detail, exactly what we did to get to the point where we are. And what you see today are mostly proposals related to Goleta, a few others as well. We intend to take them to our board on May 3rd for hopefully a positive result and then implementation in August at that point. So at this time, I'll hand over the presentation to Mr. Amoon, and we'll get started. And, of course, we're available for any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is George Moon. I'm the planning manager for MTD. And I appreciate this opportunity to present to you our service plan for this particular year. If these changes go into effect as approved by our board on May 3rd, as Jerry mentioned, they go into effect on August 22nd during this year. So first, I'd like to go over just an overview of our presentation before you today. First, the work plan and the process, basically how do we get to where we are right now, and the actual proposals that we have before you today. So as Jerry mentioned, we first started out with a work plan last summer, And from the effort up until that point forward, we determined that Goleta should be the focus. Now, we also looked at other areas in the district, Carpinteria, Santa Barbara. But for this particular year, it seemed like Goleta was the area where there was the need. So that's where we emphasized our work throughout the year, starting with that work plan. Now, throughout the year since then, we've garnered a lot of community input. We did a lot of field observations. We did surveys on the buses. We did surveys outside the buses, at bus stops, so forth, on-off surveys throughout the district. We also did a lot of data review. We compiled data. We looked at trends. We saw how certain buses are operating, passenger ridership, things like that, to see where we should focus our efforts for the Goleta area. And, of course, we also met with our bus drivers, as you can see down there. They're on the bus routes, for every day. They're out there all the time, so we thought it'd be good to have good meetings with them to get their input as well. So the actual proposals. There's a new route, Line 28. We looked at corridors, most specifically Line 6 and 7 and 11 and 20. We also looked at connections and feeders, Lines 23 and Lines 25. And we also had some adjustments that are more the minimal side, which I'll get into as well. Okay, so to begin, Line 28. Down at the end of Stork Road, as you've probably been seeing over the past couple years, there's been a lot of development going on there, right where El Colegio is. There's a lot of student housing that UCSB has been building for new students coming on board. So there's one in particular called San Joaquin Housing there, and this was actually taken last week, that's going to house about 1,000 new students. So we saw this coming, and we met with UCSB, and we formed an agreement with them to offset the impact that would be caused to transit from this new development. So as part of that, what we determined is there should be a new route to have these students go back and forth from campus using El Colegio Road through Isla Vista to UCSB, but also they need to get to work. They may work at Camino Real Marketplace, they may shop there, they may do leisure activities. So we determined that the route then should take that form. So it begins at North Hall and continues on the El Colegio Road and up Stork, makes a left on Phelps and then up Pacific Oaks to Hollister using Santa Felicia and down Stork as a one-way and then back to North Hall. So this line would be 15-minute service during the school days and then goes into 30-minute service during the evenings during the school days, and then 30-minute service during the weekends, 30-minute service during the summer, and also late-night service. So this route will go to about 11 p.m. or midnight for those students that may work late at Camino Real, or they may need to have late classes or study late at the library. So this really serves them, and again, will offset the additional impact that's caused by that new development. And this is all funded by UCSB. So we're looking forward to this partnership moving forward in August with this proposal. Okay, next, Lines 7, 8, and 9. Okay, to get your feet wet on the current alignment of these routes, the Line 7, it starts in downtown Santa Barbara, and Line 8, and uses the freeway in Cayo Real, goes through the Cumbe Shopping Center, and the Line 8 turns around at Turnpike. The Line 7 continues down University, Patterson, Cayo Real, turns around here at Cayo Real Center and goes back. Okay? So this route, as you can see, serves major destinations along the route. There's the county healthcare services, there's a Wake Center, there's the two shopping centers, there's the new healthcare clinic here on Kellogg and so forth, Maravilla. But the service on this route is intermittent. It goes on and off throughout the day. It's not frequent. And it does not serve Old Town Goleta either, as you can see. There's also the Line 9, which goes in a counterclockwise position, but this route is the lowest performing route on the system right now. It's very low ridership. Okay, so we thought, there's all those major destinations, downtown Santa Barbara, La Cumbre Plaza, Social Services, Goleta Neighborhood Clinic, and the Cayo Real Center, and we thought, how can we better make this a route that's more effective, more efficient, that serves more people? So we decided to connect it to Old Town Goleta. And here is the route. It's the same Line 7 route. It goes now, though, over the freeway using the Fairview Interchange and goes into Old Town Goleta and turns around here using Kellogg and Kimmon in this area. Okay, so now with the service, what we did is that we took the service from Line 7 and Line 8 and the Line 9 and combined it all into a better Line 7 route that's more frequent and that serves Old Town and that serves all these destinations. So if one lives in Old Town Goleta, now they can go bidirectionally to these destinations along here and back. So it provides more connectivity throughout the district for these particular folks in this area. The service would be 30-minute weekday service, and the weekend would be 60-minute weekend service, but more frequent throughout the day. Also on Line 7, here's Cairo Real, here's Turnpike 101. Currently, the route goes up Honor Farm Road and comes back down this way. So there's a little confusion as to which way the bus is going when you're waiting for the bus there. You don't know if it's going towards Santa Barbara or Goleta, and sometimes folks get on the wrong bus, going the wrong direction, or they got to talk to the bus driver to understand it, so that slows down the route. So what we're going to do here is to do a little minor reroute. So the bus is going to come this way to go toward Goleta and vice versa to go to Santa Barbara. So now that'll eliminate the confusion there as to which way the bus is going in this particular area here. Now, at the county health services, that's a one-way driveway, so we can't have bidirectional there, but that's only the only stop in that whole facility complex there where that'll happen. But overall, this will be improvement for those folks understanding which way the bus is going. Okay, Line 6 and 11. These are trunk routes. They both start at the Transit Center in downtown Santa Barbara, go along State Street, and continue along Hollister. The Line 6 continues along Hollister past Fairview and ends here. The Line 11 continues here and makes a left on Fairview, goes by the airport, goes by La Vista here on Ocleo, up Stork. Now, these two routes connect at the Stork-Hollister intersection. The lines 23 and 25. Okay, the line 25 now is connected to line 23. So the route goes like this along Hollister, goes up using the Cathedral Oaks Bridge, goes through the neighborhood, line 23, and goes back and forth all day, kind of like a figure eight per se, back and forth. So those folks that now use the line 23 and 25 always have to transfer to get to line 611. You have to get off the bus and get onto another bus to continue on. Okay. There's also some confusion as to which side of the street to stand in the line 23 land, okay, because the bus goes either direction. You can see people running across the street to catch the bus. The frequency of these two lines has increased over the past couple years. It used to be an hour, now it's about an hour 10. There's been increased congestion over the past couple years, so we had to keep the schedule up with the reality of what the bus is doing out there. So now the frequency has decreased to 1 hour and 10, which makes it more convenient for passengers to use the service. Okay, so what we did is, how can we better connect Elwood, Line 25 land, out to Goleta City Hall, out to Old Town Goleta, which continues on to downtown Santa Barbara. We thought about, how can we better connect Line 23 land, Dos Playables High School area, and that neighborhood, out to Community Rail Marketplace, UCSB, and Old Town Goleta. So what we did is that this looks the same, line 6 and 11, and line 25 looks similar. But now, for the proposal, we'll have every single line 25 trip during the day turn into the line 6. Okay, so no more need to transfer if you're riding through it. So if you live in Elwood and want to go to Goleta City Hall, you could just stay on the bus. No need to get off the bus anymore and transfer to take up your time. Okay, the same with the line 23. Every line 23 trip will turn into a line 11. Okay, so if you live say off Brandon, and you go to school at UCSB or you teach at UCSB, then you just stay on the bus every line 23 trip during the day. We'll turn to line 11. No need to transfer anymore. So now it takes about an hour to get from this area down to UCSB with the transfer time. With this proposal, it would be down a half hour. Okay, much, much better. Okay, for line 6 and 11, every other line 6 will turn to line 25. Every other line 11 trip will turn to a 23. So it'll alternate between going into a 25 or to 11. Okay, same with line 11. It'll be the line 6 or line 23, alternating. Okay, so say you are at Goleta City Hall and you live in the new Hollister Village just built here. You would just stay on the bus on that trip and you can get off at that new stop that's built there or the new stop that's being built as part of the hotel. Okay, now this service can now serve those new stops that are on the north side of Hollister, whereas now we can't. Okay, so that's a big benefit. Same for line 11. Okay, say that you live in Isla Vista and you want to go visit a friend off Cathedral Oaks Road. Okay, now you just stay on the bus here for that particular trip. No need to transfer. It cuts the time in half. Okay, big advantage. Okay, now one thing we are planning on implementing later this year is called automatic vehicle location system. You might have heard about this already. And that's where we're putting GPS on all the buses throughout our system. By doing that, we'll know where every bus is going. As part of that project with that, there'll be onboard announcements announcing where the bus is going. Okay, so if you're on the bus here on line 6 going toward the intersection, you don't know if it's going to line 11 or line 25. The bus will say automatically, this line 6 bus is turning to line 25. Okay, so you know, okay, I'm on the right bus, I know where I'm going, or I need to get off and transfer because I want to go down to line 11. Okay, so this will be the same for all these bus lines in this area so you know which bus is going in which direction. And if you're at a bus stop too, say you're at the stop in Old Town Goleta, and you want to know, okay, this bus is pulling up. Which bus is this? Is this a line 6 or a line 11 or line 25? What's going to be happening with this bus? Well, the head sign when the bus is coming will say 625 or 611, so you know which bus is coming, so you know what to do. Get on the bus or wait for the next one. An announcement will say as well 625, 611 with the speaker outside the bus, so you know as well what bus this is coming. It's also good for the blind, too, who can't see. They can hear it, and they know, okay, I'm going to wait for the next bus, or I'm going to go ahead and get on this bus. So some other features with this. This route has changed a bit, line 23. it's less curvy. Before, it kind of curved throughout the neighborhood. Now it's a straighter shot, yet it serves about the same areas within that same community. So it takes less time. There'll be bi-directional service from the intersection here, Stork and Hollister, out to Dos Pueblos High School, so back and forth. And with this one-way direction here, that'll eliminate the confusion as to which side of the street to stand on. So it's one way, so you know you got to stand on the right side of the street every time to go through there. Now, after 7 p.m. is going to be a minor change. Line 6 goes away after 7. That line goes out of service. So since that occurs, the line 23 will then make a left for night service instead of a right. So it's going to connect directly into the line 25 and continue on. Okay, it'll change at that time. Again, the AVL will help everyone out. Plus, a schedule guide as well will tell you which trips are going where. You can look at that or use the AVL system. Now, also, line 25. This will be bi-directional service now along Hollister and turn around using the Winchester Canyon Loop here. So it'll be more convenient service there, serving all the stops along that corridor, including the new one over at Hollister Village. Okay, so overall with this proposal, there'd be fewer transfers, which means shorter duration of trips. You get to where you're going quicker. There'll be hourly service now on line 23 and 25. Instead of 1 hour and 10, so it'll be more frequent. And the line 611 schedule will remain the same. So you don't have to get used to a new schedule at all, which is the main service for those two routes that go along Hollister and Stork and State Street. Okay, next, line 20. This goes from downtown Santa Barbara down to Milpa Street, Coast Village Road, continues through Summerlin to Carpinteria and back. This is the route. Again, downtown Santa Barbara, Milpas uses the freeway for a certain extent, goes along through downtown Carpinteria and back, way out here. So this is a corridor enhancement we're looking at. Currently, the service is hourly during the midday, during the weekdays, and as a result, the buses can get quite full at that time. And this is a long-haul trip from Carpinteria all the way to Santa Barbara, partially on the freeway. So to offset that, what we decided to do is to add some trips during the midday, during the week, so that there's more frequency for folks and also less crowding on the bus during that time. Last mile service. This goes back to what we were saying earlier about the 101 congestion. There's an effort underway as part of the 101 in motion to retime some Amtrak trains during the AM and PM peak. So if you live in Ventura and you work in Goleta, they're trying to retime some trains so that you arrive during the 7 to 8 o'clock hour in Goleta and then leave between 5 and 6 to go back to where you live. Okay. Now, this is an effort underway by SBCAG and Caltrans as part of that whole plan. So our service would be to provide bus service that would go from the train stations downtown Santa Barbara and Goleta to the major workplaces. So you need some way of getting from the train station to where you work and back. So this would be provided by us. This is currently a placeholder, though. We're not sure if this would happen this fall or next year, but we're still presenting it to you in case it does happen this fall. But we shall see. One other main point about this, since it's part of that 101 in motion process, this is to be funded by SBCAG and Caltrans as part of that project. Okay, finally, miscellaneous adjustments. There's one trip on the line 16 that goes from downtown Santa Barbara to Santa Barbara City College during the summer or the summertime, about 7:35 a.m. The Kaplan School was using City College for years during the summer. They're now relocating to downtown Santa Barbara, so the need for this trip is no longer there as much. So we're deciding to eliminate this trip, but there still is the line 5 and line 417, which go from downtown Santa Barbara up to the Mesa, including to Santa Barbara City College. So there's still service, but just for that lesser demand now, we feel we can go ahead and eliminate this particular trip. There's also the line 2510 during the PM only, during the summer only. That's a school booster trip, which goes from San Marcos High School to downtown Santa Barbara. We're finding that the ridership is very low, and there are a couple students. There's more ridership during the morning during the summer, but in the PM, hardly any. So we feel that we don't need to provide that trip anymore. So we're proposing to eliminate that. There still is the line 611, and that would connect to the line 417 at the downtown Trend Center for those that still want to get home during that hour. But there's alternative means to get from their school at that time. And that's what most students are doing right now. They're doing other things after school, and then they go home at a different hour. So there's not that much of a need to have this trip anymore. One last slide. We've been doing a lot of community outreach over the past couple weeks. We've held 7 meetings throughout the district, 2 here in Goleta, to get input. We also had a lot of tabling over at the Stork-Hollister intersection. I think a total of about 15 hours of tabling over the past 2 weeks, and a lot of tabling over in Old Town Goleta as well to get the word out about these changes. And we plan to do this again, too, in August before the changes go out to effect, so people understand what will be coming in terms of the changes that could affect their service. The feedback so far has overall been supportive, and so we're happy to hear that. And so we plan to take this to our board again on May 3rd for approval. But so far, so good, and what we've been hearing from the input from the public over the past couple weeks on this. And that's it. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer any that you may have.
A couple of questions just to emphasize a few things. First of all, thank you for the presentation. I sat through a few of them now, but every time I see it, I learn something else. So it's working. I think that you should also remind or let the council know the other ways that you're advertising, as far as MTDNL using social media.
Sure, we're getting more into using Facebook, Twitter, as a way to you know, for the public to see that and advertise that as a way for them to connect to us, for them to give us our input. So we're getting more and more into that. As in addition to the meetings we hold throughout the district. And we're also using mediums as a way of Goleta TV, Santa Barbara TV as a scroll, slides, things like that to use other ways to get input from the public.
Okay, and I know that you're working very closely with our planning department, anticipating future population sites that may develop that would need, that should be dependent on transit.
Sure, yeah. We meet quarterly with Public Works and with other departments here at Goleta to find out what's coming down the pike so we can know ahead of time and plan proactively as to what should be done for bus stop improvements, either a pocket or not, shelters or not, lighting or not, things like that. So when it comes time for development, you know, a developer can put those things in for us as part of the project. So we appreciate that.
Okay, then my final question has to do with the elimination of Line 9, which is our Old Town Shuttle. And historically, it's been very low performing for many years, but we hung on to it because it was our Old Town Shuttle. The question, maybe you can go to that one. Let me give you, I'm in Old Town right now, and I want to go to Community Rail Marketplace to have lunch. I'm working in Old Town.
So currently?
Yeah. Okay. No, with the new plan.
Oh, okay.
How would you get me to Community Rail, and also what would be the headway? Or if on the other way, Citrix wants to come down to Old Town to have lunch.
So Citrix is off Hollister in this. Mm-hmm.
Or very west end of Hollister.
Sorry, over here. So what they would do now, let me go to the other slide. It's lunchtime and they want to go to Old Town Goleta to have lunch. They can get on this bus route currently, which is about once an hour, and they will continue on out to Old Town, have lunch, and then come back. Now, every Line 25 trip would turn to Line 6, so no longer will they need to transfer at Stork and Hollister. They could just get on the bus here, the next one that comes, and just carry on forward and have their lunch and come back. Now, they got to make sure on the way back that they're on the bus that goes from the Line 6 to the Line 25, of course, or they can transfer here or walk. But that's what they would do. They would get on any bus that comes this way and then get on the bus that goes all the way back to Citrix in this location. Yeah.
And that's what their proposed changes.
Yes, sir.
And the headway would be?
Currently, it depends on the time of day, but I believe during the lunch hour, it's every half hour on the Line 6 that goes through.
And what about going west from Old Town, same situation?
Going west, same thing, because the Line 11 splits off at Fairview, so you'd want to take, you could take, if you really wanted to, the Line 6 or 11, because the line 11 comes down Fairview, goes through Iliveston, comes up Stork, and ends there as well. But for Line 6, I believe it's every half hour during the lunchtime.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Are there other questions? Yeah, please, Ms. Perotti.
I guess, first of all, were your meetings that you had, outreach for the community, were they pretty well attended? Did you feel that a lot of people showed up, or...?
It's standard.
It's hard to get a lot of people.
That's standard to get a lot of people to come out during the evening time, away from their day, to go to one of our meetings. We get on average about, honestly, 5 people per meeting, you know. So that's why we're trying to find other ways to outreach to the public. I mean, those that attend are very enthusiastic. They ask a lot of questions, and we give them a lot of information, and it's a good feedback loop. But it is not very well attended, to be honest, you know. So that's why we're trying to look at different methods. And this tabling that we did out there at Stork and Hollister, I probably gave out, I'd say, about 200 flyers on the changes that we're proposing here. And we're handing it to them, and we're explaining them to them there at the bus stop while they're waiting for the bus or they're getting on and off the bus. And that, I feel, is an effective way to really get out to the public directly to let them know what's coming down the pike, you know. And again, the Facebook and the Twitter, social media will be another good way for for people learning to know what's going on out there. It's a new age now, and people are moving less away from going to meetings, and they're more into watching things electronically. We also did this PowerPoint with a voiceover, and we posted it to our website. So folks can see this PowerPoint at home and hear the voiceover and see what's coming if they'd like to do that. So we intend to market that video out as well, so people can just watch and learn rather than having to come to a meeting, you know.
I know when I was looking at all the changes, I thought they sounded pretty good. I know my sister comes from New York, and she visits at least twice a year. And since she's so used to riding buses in New York, she always rides the bus here. So right. I'm down in Winchester Canyon, and she's always complaining how long it takes to get anywhere because the bus goes through all the neighborhoods, you know. So
right.
This sounds a little bit more direct. Mm-hmm. Instead of what she was trying to do is like run or ride a bike to Stork and Hollister and take the bus from there. So,
right.
But as getting back to sharing the information, I was thinking about it, and I was wondering if you thought maybe some of these places, like the community center, having, you know, because they have their ticket thing there, so letting the information be available to people there or through our library.
Okay.
Santa Cruz Market, there's quite a lot of people that go there.
Mm-hmm.
Will the bus drivers have the information? So if somebody gets on the wrong bus, they might be able to give them a pamphlet or something to let them know what the new changes are.
Yeah, that's part of the strategy is to, we presented to all the bus drivers during their trainings to know what's coming as well. So they're all very well versed on what's going on out there. And we actually use them as part of the marketing to know about the changes out there. We hand them a stack of the postcards and they're passing out to all the passengers that are on there. So that was very useful as well.
I would think that'd be especially helpful to the routes that are being discontinued.
Sure.
That they know what alternative routes they can take, what other buses.
And two weeks before, too, we'll post everywhere on those bus stops so people know way ahead of time what's coming.
That's good.
You know?
And then even the neighborhood clinic, because a lot of people are going to that. This seems like a much easier way for them to get there.
Sure, absolutely.
So... those are just some of the ideas I came up with. And I don't know if 211 would handle that information or not.
Hmm.
I'm not sure if that would be able to be posted on 211. It's just a thought. I'm not sure. But thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Are there other comments or questions?
George, we're going to be able to use our phone apps, right?
Oh, yes. As part of that AVL system I mentioned, there'd be an app where, and you might have seen these in other cities, where you can download the app and know exactly when the bus is coming to your stop. So every bus stop will have a number there, number 321, number 22, whatever. And you put that in, and so you know exactly when the bus is coming rather than wondering, oh, did the bus pass already? Am I too early, too late? So that's going to be a big advantage toward passengers knowing what's happening. And also, I think you have some level of attracting ridership throughout the year. So now there's a certainty rather than the uncertainty coming aboard, you know.
Now, will that information be based upon the scheduled stop or the GPS system that you have on
the phone?
Yeah, the app.
Yeah, that's based on real-time information. So that's based on where the bus is on during the route. So say there's a lot of traffic on Hollister someday that's unusual, and the bus is going to be 10 minutes late. Someone will know, oh, the bus is going to be 10 minutes late now because of the traffic. Yeah, that's probably going to be used a lot more as time goes on rather than the schedule guide, because that's going to reflect accurate information rather than what's projected in the schedule guide for the schedule.
Yeah, you know? Very impressive. Yeah. Okay, let's take a vote on authorizing the city manager to send a letter of support. Is there a motion to that effect?
I'd be glad to make a motion that we send a letter to the city council in support of the changes. And also thank George and Jerry for their time in making the presentation to this council. Well done. Very professional.
Thank you.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Yeah, thank you very much. That was very interesting. I wouldn't want to be tested on all the changes. But, it was very complex, and I'm sure your research has guided the way. So thank you for coming in and talking.
I also want to acknowledge Bill Schieler is here. He's also a member of the MTD board. So,
Bill, did you come for this purpose? Did you want to say anything?
That's
thank you. I think it was well timed.
All right, very good.
Can we quiz Bill on the route? Can we quiz Bill on the routes?
He's got to commit it to memory.
He may hear it a few more times.
Fair enough.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.
All right. We are at the point of council comments and standing committee reports. Councilmember Bennett.
God bless you.
Can we pick on you first?
You may pick on me first, but I'm certainly not ready, but I will be in an instant here if you bear with me.
I did this to you last time, too. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. I just need to get myself oriented where I can pull the information out and go back to where we all were last time around when I reported. So, as was mentioned this evening, I attended the Public Safety Committee where the presentation you received this evening was presented and discussed. And let's see, moving on after that, went to the opening of the Jane restaurant in the marketplace, which was very enjoyable and attended by many, many folks, which I thought was great. And that was pretty awesome all the way around. Had a library ad hoc committee on Tuesday, April 12th, and talked about essentially what was presented again today to council. And then on Wednesday, I was in San Francisco with our attorney, and we were meeting with representatives of the CPUC. I believe the meetings went well, and that pretty much wraps up what I did since the last council meeting.
Thank you. Very good. Councilmember Perotti.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a Devereaux board meeting on April the 8th where we're working on putting together a showcase of artwork from the clients that are there, and that's scheduled to be in September, October. Really looking forward to that. April the 12th, we had our library ad hoc committee meeting, and Councilmember Bennett spoke to, April the 13th, I had the South Coast Task Force on Youth Safety meeting, and they made the same presentation that we saw tonight, and that was good. Last Saturday, I went to the Earth Day booth for elected officials, Earth Day elected officials booth, and the theme was One World, One Climate, and their logo, which I was so impressed with, was to highlight the monarch butterfly. And so everywhere you'd see the monarch butterfly, and our docents were out there. They weren't too far from where I was, but they were always crowded with children, and they had some kind of a game that they were playing with the kids and learning a lot of facts about the butterflies, the monarch butterflies. So it was really a hot day, but well attended and a lot of fun, so I'm glad I went. And I had a lot of people come up and ask a lot of questions about Goleta, so I'm glad I participated. And that's it for me.
All right, and thank you for participating in that. Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot because I've been busy filing taxes for, feels like forever, but I think just the last few weeks. I did go to the Jane event, though, and that was really neat. It's a welcome addition to our restaurant inventory in Goleta. It's a really nice place, and food was great. Ask about the pizza oven if you're there. They have a really cool pizza oven. And then we had our grant funding committee meetings that happened immediately after our last council meeting. And I want to thank Jean Blois and Sylvia. Thank you, Sylvia Marley. I couldn't remember her first name. For sitting on that committee, they and Mayor Farr certainly came very well prepared. And I'll make the rest of you jealous. We were done within 2.5 hours, and we were set to go.
Oh, we've done it in less time.
You're a liar. I'm sorry.
Are you going to mention the dartboard?
I was going to stick to just the names in the hat, but no, it went really well. They were really well prepared, along with Mayor Farr, and there were some tough decisions in there, of course, mm-hmm. because there's so many worthy recipients. But we did. I feel a good job of getting through it, and I'm being prepared for that. And other than that, I just filed taxes, so that's it.
Well, we're glad that you have managed to surmount that challenge in such an effective way. All right, Council Member Aceves.
Let's see. The calendar here, I paid my taxes. since our last meeting, mostly MTD stuff, we finished up today the personnel policy. We just redid the entire personnel policy. And that's been on one of my bucket lists. I like to characterize our prior personnel policy as a policy that has been over Xeroxed. And those of you that know how manuals change without a system, sometimes they get over Xeroxed. Now we have a new one that was adopted unanimously by the board this morning. So I'm really excited about that. But that was like four meetings to get it done. So I'm glad we finally got it done. On the 7th, we had our LAFCO meeting. I chaired the portion of the UCSB's Community Services District. So that moved forward with their recommendation, which was an 8% tax. And now it'll have to go to be placed on the ballot by the county in November. And if it doesn't pass in November, they have to wait another 2 years. And if it doesn't pass, they have to wait another 2 years. So after three attempts, if it doesn't pass, then the district is dissolved. On the 13th, I went on behalf of the mayor and presented a proclamation to CALM. They had their Child Abuse Prevention Month, and it was great to see a lot of old friends were still around when I was there at the police department, because we counted so much on the services of CALM with their forensic interviews. It's hard to believe that CALM has been in our community now 45 years, and now they're countywide, which is quite impressive. That's about it. Just a little heads up for the future, and you put on your calendar on May 11th, will be the Tom Gehry Awards, where we award law enforcement valor and performance. And that's going to be May 11th at the Board of Supervisors room in Santa Barbara. They've already selected the award winners, but I can't tell you yet. So May 11th, put it on your calendar. And I have one thing, a request, and hopefully somebody will support me on it. Today we had a presentation of what MTD does for Goleta, and I think we should get a presentation from Ernesto Paredes from EasyLift to see how that works in partnership with MTD. So if we can schedule it, maybe have, and I talked to Mr. Paredes already, and he's willing to do it. So if we can get him to come over whenever we have room on the agenda and do a similar production, I think it'd be a benefit for not only our council, but also for the public.
I support that.
I think it's unanimous.
I got unanimous support. So that's it for me.
All right.
I did have one more thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's
Mayor
okay.
Pro Tem Vallejo, please.
I forgot to mention we had the community committee meeting for the Boys and Girls Club. I got to remember to say Girls Club. When I was in it, it was just Boys Club back then. And the only reason I bring it up because I wanted to thank Deputy Valadez, who's offered to join the council with me. So he will be joining me. I think it's next week we're meeting again. And they were really excited to have a representative from law enforcement, especially after I finished singing your praises about how great you are in the community already. So thank you very much for taking on another task. I appreciate it.
Very good. Your name always seems to come up in a favorable fashion here. So you're obviously doing something very well. Thank you, Officer Valadez.
He does not know how to say no.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
He'll learn.
He hasn't learned yet. Don't teach him.
Hey, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to jump in here, too. I forgot something.
All right. Here's Council Member Bennett.
Mr. Kemp, who is the director of SBCAG, has announced his retirement. So we will be going through the process and seeking a replacement. I forget exactly the date. I think he's looking around the 1st of August or thereabouts. But I just wanted to pass that on. I just learned that, actually.
Very good. All right. the council member, the Mayor Pro Tem Vallejo, already mentioned the grant funding. I have to say that that was a delightful experience, giving the money away. I mean, there's a lot of it is a bit of a guess in the dark. You know, you don't know who to encourage and who to reward, but I thought we did it very well, and the people on the committee, including Ms. Blois and Ms. Marley, as well as the Mayor Pro Tem, and Claudia Dado, who ran the committee, everybody was very easy to work with, and nobody went in there in a dogmatic way and made it a troublesome experience. It was quite a delight. We had a state of the city review here in the city manager's office. That was on the 12th, and I thought that was kind of interesting, and I'm sure it'll be a great success. I met with Jim Youngson, who is a spokesperson for Venico, and Venico, as the audience may know out there, is going through a number of changes, including bankruptcy, and so there are a lot of moving parts on that, so it was interesting to hear what he had to say. I went to the library zoning ordinance meeting that the Jennifer Carmen and Ann Wells held at the Goleta Library, and it was very informative, and both of them handled themselves in a very professional way, even with a bit of humor, if you can find that in there. They managed to, and the audience, they went out of there, actually including Mr. Sheeler, I have to say. He said that he was encouraged to hear what they had to say and the way that they said it. So I'm sure the audience, including George Rellis and the Goodland Coalition and the League of Women Voters, was there. It was a very good event. And nobody mentioned what we did yesterday, but we had 5 hours of meetings here on the future of the Goleta Valley Community Center. And everybody did yeoman work, and I think everybody feels pretty good about that meeting yesterday, which brings us around to our city manager, Michelle Green, because she was the honcho on that. So thank you for that. If you would like to tell us what you've been doing.
I just want to note a couple of upcoming events. Tomorrow we have our quarterly town and gown meeting. We will be out at UCSB once again, starting with a brief tour of the library and then a number of updates that we will provide one another. And if we have anything interesting to report after that meeting, we'll share that with council in our upcoming weekly update. Also, staff has a OEM Refugio After Action meeting that's next Tuesday, the 26th. So again, as a result of that, if we have interesting items to share with council, we'll send that out to you. And then we have our budget workshop coming up on April 28th. That's at 2 p.m. here in council chambers. That is a public meeting. So that's all I had.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Green. And now, is there a report from our city attorney?
Well, I did want to share one item with the city council. I learned today regarding the RDA dissolution legislation from the state. You may recall that one element of the state's dissolution of redevelopment agencies was that if there was money owed from any redevelopment agency or the state felt there was, that they could withhold tax payments to cities if they thought that was the way to get their money. That had been held unconstitutional at the Superior Court, and the state had appealed that decision, and Court of Appeal agreed with the Superior Court. This was in a legislation or a litigation that was brought by the California League of Cities. Today, I was informed that the state did not appeal, and the time for appeal of that has expired, and so that is now the law. That clawback provision that the state tried to put in part of this RDA dissolution has been struck down and will not be something that we will see in the future.
Very good. Governor came in for some brickbats in the Times the other day about a Korea town development and how it's kind of faded away because the RDA went away. So I think it's only fair he gets a whack on that occasionally, and I'm glad that so far we're doing okay in that regard. So thank you for that report, Mr. Giles. Now, unless somebody else has something to say, or there's something I'm forgetting to do, I'm going to wrap this gavel down. I offered the mayor pro tem the opportunity to hammer it, but he was not interested. So
too much pressure.
I'm sorry?
Too much pressure.
Yeah, right. So until next time, the evening session of the Goleta City Council is now adjourned.